But it does explain why it's late here. Okay. We good, Sam? Good evening. A warm welcome to everybody. The time being 5:30, I will declare the meeting officially open. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone here tonight. My name is Paula Eaton. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough. Good evening to those who are in the public gallery, but also to our viewers who are watching from live stream at home via YouTube. I officially declare tonight's meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. And in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services to advise that the recording is on.
It is.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal community. The attendees that we have this evening, myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. For the staff with us this evening, the Acting General Manager, Dr. Stevenson, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, the NAB Coordinator, Ms. Quinn, the Senior Planning Officer, Mr. Donovan, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Grace. Moving to page one, the confirmation of the minutes, and the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 21, held on the 25th of October 2021, be confirmed as a true record. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last council meeting. There have been no workshops held because we actually had a council meeting last Monday night. Turning to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I have a good friend that lives in Stuart Crescent, and I'll be leaving the room on advice from the Acting General Manager.
Thank you. Does anyone else have... Councillor Fox.
I'd just like to declare that I have had phone discussions with residents from Taruna as well as the developer this afternoon.
Thank you.
But I will be staying in the room.
Thank you. Councillor Gladewright.
So have I.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, same. Councillor Cordova,
same. Same, both from residents on the... Yeah, I visited the site with residents from the street, and also I've had a phone call from the proponent.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood.
Me.
Same. And I've also spoken to a number of residents as well. So thank you very much. Staying on page two, the transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed or closed into open? No? Thank you. Staying on page two, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public with us this evening, would you like to ask a question on notice? No? Thank you. Questions on notice from the public. If you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au, and then we will provide an answer at the following council meeting. We had one question on notice. It was from Mr. Matthew Horsham. It was in relation to retention of planning staff, and there is an officer's response from Dr. Katrina Stevenson. Page three, there was a question from an unknown person in relation to the responsibilities at the Audit Panel Committee, and there's an officer's response from Mr. Breen. And also on page three, question from an unknown person in relation to the community hub, and an officer's response from Mr. Smee. Moving now to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Street, and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is actually in relation to the questions on notice from the public for this week. Certainly, I would encourage any ratepayer or resident to submit questions to council meetings, but my understanding was that they were required to also provide a name and suburb at least. What's the situation with the two unknown questions in that respect?
Thank you. I'll ask the Acting General Manager to respond to that, please.
I recognise that it is unusual. We did receive the correspondence in writing via email. The gentleman is known to council but uses a nom de plume in his emails. And it was a very long email, but I felt the two core questions were actually of community benefit to answer, and that's why we proceeded with them in this case.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, ma'am. My question is relating to page 185, current and ongoing resolutions. Paid parking within Central Kingston. And the officer's comments are, this is to be revisited following the completion of the state government of the Huntingfield Park and Ride site. Has the Aboriginal review of that site been finished yet, or is it still ongoing?
I'm just looking towards... We might have to take that one on notice.
Thank you.
Of it. Apologies. Thank you. We'll take that one on notice. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions relating to the Kingborough Community Safety Committee minutes. Is now a good time to ask those?
Absolutely.
Wonderful, thank you. So the minutes on page 165 of our council agenda have two action items that I'd like to ask some questions about. The first is action item, Councillor Westwood to write a letter to DSG, Department of State Growth, on behalf of the committee requesting that the speed limits going in both the north and south directions of the Huon Highway past the Sandfly intersection be reviewed and a change from 100 kilometres per hour to 80 kilometres per hour be considered. Let me preface all these questions by saying I'm absolutely not casting any aspersions or trying to give anybody a hard time. It's more about process. I'm just trying to figure out process. My first question is just, have those letters been sent to the Department of State Growth yet?
Councillor Westwood, you are actually able to answer that.
Thank you, Mayor. I signed those letters late last week, so I imagine they would have been sent by now.
Thanks. And my second question is just... In writing those letters, are they written from the Deputy Mayor on behalf of the Safety Committee? Do they in any way reflect the official position of Council on those issues?
No, they're written from myself in my capacity as Chair of that committee on behalf of the Kingborough Community Safety Committee.
Okay, thank you. And just the reason I'm kind of bringing it up, my issue here is that when it comes to the Sandfly intersection, it turns out that there was actually extensive community consultation on that very recently, and hundreds of people participated. It was 669 people in total, and they came to the exact opposite conclusion of what that letter is asking, I guess, the Minister to do. So I've got a couple of questions about how those letters might potentially affect Council and, I guess, the terms of reference or the scope of all advisory committees, not just the safety one, when it comes to running campaigns without Council oversight. The report that I'm talking about is the Huon Highway and Sandfly Road Intersection Speed Limit Review Consultation and Feedback Report, which came out in January 2020, and it said that at Sandfly Intersection, 64% of submissions opposed the speed limit being reduced to 80 kilometres an hour. And then it finishes the executive summary on page one by saying, taking into consideration the feedback from the community, the reduction of the speed limit at Sandfly Junction is not proposed. Was the safety committee aware of that outcome, do you think?
I was aware of that outcome. I'm not 100% sure if the safety committee were. I think they were, and we did have quite an extensive discussion about it. And I guess we probably should have timed the letter to coincide with that consultation period, but unfortunately our meetings are only every second month. And so I guess in writing that letter it was just to add weight to the argument on the other side that at 100 kilometres an hour it is very difficult to navigate that intersection.
Yep. Thank you. And I also note that there was another directive in those minutes to write a letter to DSG on behalf of the committee requesting the speed limits of the Channel Highway through Snug and Kettering be reviewed for reduction from 60 to 50. My question here is, when you have committees that are running advocacy campaigns with letters written by the Deputy Mayor to the state government, my concern is that a reasonable person would think that that is somehow to do with the council. So my question is, with the 24-hour policing, that came before the council, we talked about it, and then the letter was written. And I kind of have fears in my head that, you know, if the safety committee came up with ideas around gun control or drug law reform, you know, would they be allowed to send letters on behalf of themselves but from the Deputy Mayor of Kingborough, and what would that look like when they're engaging directly with the state government? So my question is, what oversight does council have to have over the kinds of advocacy that council-established committees are doing to state government? Do we have any oversight?
I don't believe that we have anything written down in the terms of reference of those for those committees. It has varied in the time that I've been on council. It has varied whether it's for, say, a notice of motion in relation to something. For example, with the Disability Access and Inclusion Advisory Committee, we have a decision that committee made via a notice of motion in relation to an issue, but we are doing some further research on it before I then bring it back to council to make a decision on where we go with that, even though it was the wish of the committee. Mm. So I think you have raised a very good point, and I think we probably need to look at what mechanisms there are for actions from committees, how they then feed into here before they then funnel out any further. I don't know whether, Mr. Smee, do you have anything that you'd like to add? Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. The terms of reference for the committee do indicate that the chair of the committee is the only person able to speak on behalf of the committee. I guess you need to look at the history in relation to how this committee was formed, because it used to be completely independent of council, the Police and Community Liaison Group, where they had absolutely no requirement to make recommendations to council to seek the endorsement of council. And that's opposed to some of our advisory committees, where their role is to provide advice to council. They will make a recommendation that then goes through an officer assessment and then a council decision. So I think the Mayor's right. It is an issue that does need to be fleshed out a bit further. And certainly there are issues where it's quite appropriate that the chair of the committee speaks on behalf of the committee. I guess finding that balance between where it should be reported to council for formal decision and where it's simply a matter for the committee to deal with is something that, in the terms of reference, perhaps we can explore further.
Thank you so much. My final question on that is, just because in this specific instance with the Sandfly Road intersection, that particular piece of advocacy is in direct contravention with a very recent community consultation which found the exact opposite. So this will be quite an unpopular view just in this particular circumstance. So, yes, can we please have some formalised guidance around that moving forward? Thanks.
And if I can just add, if I'm not mistaken, when there is a request to change the speed limit, I know when it happens on our roads, we are asked to do community consultation prior to it submitting the request to Department of State Growth. So just to allay your concerns, I suspect, even though this is a state growth road, they would probably have to follow the same procedure. If they were going to do it themselves, they would probably need to do community consultation in order to get feedback for the change. So I don't think it would be a matter that they would just do it on the basis of a letter from the committee. If you follow that thought process,
I agree. Yeah. Because, in fact, I think they did do consultation both in June, July of 2019 and again in 2020, and they came to the conclusion that they weren't going to reduce it because the community didn't want them to.
Yep.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just looking at the open resolutions, and I'm just wondering whether staff have any idea in relation to the proposed transfer of land by UTAS at Taroona Beach, seeing it's now exceeded 2.5 years.
Mr. Smee?
Mayor, as I understand it, it's still held up as part of the subdivision process, but I don't know the exact reason and the details of what the hold-up is, but that's where it's at. It's still going through the subdivision process.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Wondering what the status is of the turf wicket pitch for the twin ovals, or perhaps the future plan for this place.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, Council's formal position on this matter is captured within the future directions plan for the Kingba Sports Precinct, and that is that the most feasible option to deliver a turf wicket within the precinct is to install one within the AFL ground at the Twin Ovals. That is a project that certainly the Kingba District Cricket Club and Cricket Tasmania are very keen to pursue. From a staff perspective, we have indicated that all of the costs of installation should be met by Cricket Tasmania, and that if it was to proceed, we want a full detailed plan before we would give any consent for that to happen. So we met with representatives from both Cricket Tasmania and the Kingba District Cricket Club probably 6 weeks ago now, and we conveyed that information to them. Cricket Tasmania undertook to go away to obtain some costings, and that's where it currently sits. We're waiting for Cricket Tas to get back to us. The other relevant factor is that we indicated that we would not be giving any consent to works that had an impact on the 2022 football season, which in effect means that the work would need to be completed by this Christmas. So given we're now the 1st of November, I would see it highly unlikely that any contractor is going to be able to get in and do the works pre-Christmas. But at this stage, in the absence of any council decision to the contrary, that remains council's position. And if, as it seems likely, it won't go ahead this year, I suspect that we would be looking to have everything lined up for the start of next summer season.
Thank you. A further question regarding the Huntingfield DA that was passed at the last council meeting. How are we working with state government to address the infrastructure that is absolutely a central part of this development and a very big concern from the community?
Dr. Stevenson.
Can I seek clarification on what you mean exactly? Do you mean...
The roads infrastructure, the plans that are in, I guess, submitted for the roundabout, and just dealing with the traffic congestion and the impact that will have.
So the roundabout DA is... The roundabout DA has already been considered and approved by council. We've had a commitment that the slip lane proposal, the DA, will be lodged before the end of the year, but I'm looking at Tim. I don't believe it has been... No, it has not been lodged at this stage.
Any other, I guess, implications regarding the ongoing traffic congestion and the increase of traffic congestion as a result of the increase in housing? Are there any other ways that we're working with state government in regards to that?
Through you, Mayor. Not at this stage. Given that we've only just approved the first stage of development, we're waiting on the development application for the slip lane, and other than advocating through perhaps a future budget round or a future election campaign, we have very little sway, I think it would be fair to say.
If I can just add to that, I think what we should be doing as a council is actually lobbying for them to bring forward the funding for the Algona Road intersection to upgrade that, because that's going to be the point that is particularly difficult. So my suggestion, if somebody would like to take it up, is that we have a notice of motion for our next meeting to lobby the state government in relation to bringing that forward, because I think there's no funding for that until about 25-26.
Thank you. That was more what I was referring. That roundabout, that Algona Road, yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Great idea.
Any further questions without notice? Otherwise, we'll move on. Questions on notice from councillors. We're at page 4. There was one question on notice. It was from Councillor Bastone. It was in relation to the Simpsons Bay boat ramp, and there was an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. The open session of council now adjourns, and the planning authority commences at 5:50 p.m. Moving to page 5, and for the information of those listening, Councillor Bastone, who has declared an interest, is leaving the room for this item. So we have item number DA 38 of 2019. It is a development application for a subdivision of 6 residential lots, 1 road, lot and balance, and demolition of dwelling at 137 Channel Highway, Taroona. There is a recommendation on page 26. Do I have a mover and a seconder for the motion? We have a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Westwood. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I move the recommended motion in line with staff's advice. Mayor, there's been considerable community representation on this matter, and I recognise that, and I thank all community members for those representations. This development application is one that does fit within the planning scheme. That may be an unfortunate truth for some of the residents in the surrounding area, but it is one that's unavoidable for council as it sits as the planning authority. Assessments of DAs can't be made on a motion. They're seldom discretionary, and they must be made on the basis of whether or not an application is in line with the planning scheme or whether it is not. On this occasion, I agree with the staff advice that this development application does fit within the planning scheme. Now, I know full well that that is absolutely no comfort to those people in the surrounding area who do not want this application to be approved, but it is the reality before council this evening. It's my view that we would be irresponsible to do anything other than approve the development application as conditioned, because as conditioned it does fit within the planning scheme. It is one of the things that council struggles to communicate most with the community, our position as planning authority, and the position that ultimately we are assessors in this process. We are not decision makers per se. It's not for us to decide whether or not we think a development application is a good idea. It is for us to decide whether it fits within the planning scheme. And on this occasion, I thank staff for a very comprehensive report, which shows that this council has little option but to vote to approve the DA in question.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for that succinct summary of the dilemma we face. Wearing our two hats, Councillor Street, I note that this is recommended for approval with 26 conditions attached, which take up 11 printed A4 pages. I have had a number of conversations with residents, and I do understand the angst that they are feeling about this development. But in my view, having read through the report and the advice that we have received, I'm comfortable that it meets the planning scheme.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I've also looked very carefully at this document, and I guess the only issue that I have a question about at this point is the fact that the linkages which the residents would like to see between lots. Apparently this land has been used extensively by existing residents to communicate with other parts of the area, and wondering if there are any possibilities of providing some linkages within this area and whether that's been looked at.
Dr. Stevenson? No, oh, sorry.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it has been looked at, but I'm going to let Mr. Donovan talk to the detail.
Mr. Donovan. On the side first. And now on the front. Sorry, I should have told you this
glad
earlier. Thank you, Mr. Donovan.
In relation to the open space, yes, we did look at the open space issues. A couple of comments. The open space policy does have some criteria which we do address. In this regard, it was felt that the land is perhaps not meeting what the open space policy sees as ideal in how it's looked at and chosen. Firstly, I guess the question is a public pathway here going to play a strategic role and provide some significant community benefit? That's a matter of opinion, but our view, perhaps not. I understand the locals, the neighbours and others have been using the land for a long period of time. That's fortunate, but with no endorsement or right. It is all private land. The land all around the site, if you look to the maps and have a look at that, is perhaps not able also to be further developed in any great numbers. So I guess our view was providing a public way through there was perhaps not the best location and of great benefit under our policy. If I could paraphrase, it might be a road to nowhere in terms of the adjacent lands, particularly higher up where you have the higher environmental values aren't or probably won't be developed and opened up. So I guess from our point of view, the acquiring land on that site didn't perhaps meet the criteria we would normally look at. For council to take over that site and have it managed is a considerable ask, I believe, in terms of its overall benefits. So from our point of view, what's outlined in your current policy and what you're looking at in your new policies perhaps doesn't meet all the criteria for that in being a significant benefit to the community. So our view was that, therefore, it wasn't appropriate to acquire land for a public way. There are no other public ways in the area. It doesn't join any, and it doesn't go anywhere else, and it's unlikely to for a long time. So I guess the overall benefit wasn't seen to be there. Different situation if it was adjoining other public areas and areas that are opened up and used and managed, but in this case it didn't. So that was perhaps our main reasoning. Therefore, we thought it was appropriate, Mayor, to apply the policy and ask for the cash in lieu.
Thank you. Councillor Fox?
If there were development in the area in the future, would there still be a possibility to take public open space from the remainder of the block in future for recreational purposes?
Mr. Donovan.
There's a couple of assumptions there. The area is not earmarked for further development beyond what it currently is, and the surrounding area north and west of the site is in the environmental living zone. My understanding is the new scheme, which is available and you've seen, doesn't change that. It's very unlikely that there would be substantial development in the area. That would be our only opportunity to acquire the land if it was developed. Whether you go and buy it with other funds is another matter, but in terms of, as you said, in terms of acquiring it from a development, it needs to develop, and this, my observation would be that's unlikely to occur. I'm not saying it won't, I never say it's impossible for development, but looking at the area, the future zoning, which isn't changing, the constraints and the environmental values, my suggestion is it's probably unlikely that areas to the southwest and adjacent to the site would be developed in such a way that you would get a significant pathway system developed. Yeah.
Councillor Fox.
Further questions in relation to the landslip area. I realise that there's been a substantial report provided to show that the area is outside the landslip zone, but I'm surprised at that. Because it's directly opposite the school and there is a landslip line on the highway just below this property, I guess I'm concerned about the fact that we have on record that the whole area is on the move. And also, that's one question, and I've got another question about the fact that there is...
Shall we take them one at a time, just for ease of Mr. Donovan?
Yeah.
Mr. Donovan.
A couple of points there. Yes, you're quite right. The council did a study itself, and you're probably all aware of that, not so long ago, and it had some interesting findings, which involved the community as well. And you're quite right. The highway seems to be that boundary between the lower area, which is the more unstable and higher risk, than this area here. For information, the site where the works are occurring for the low-density res blocks is in the low-risk area. And other parts of the site are in the medium risk, but they're not the areas being developed with the new roads and the blocks. So you're quite right. There is a concern. We did ask the applicant after the application finished advertising to do further work, and they've actually, as you said, they have engaged a qualified geotech person, which we recognise, to do a more detailed study. It's that study that we've relied on. Secondly, we have imposed significant conditions on the application, to make sure that things happen when things are being done in the future in terms of detailed designs and also on-site construction, that we'll keep tabs on that. That's the best we can do, I think. The report, I believe, has demonstrated, or my advice is that the report they provided has demonstrated compliance to our landslip code in addressing the issues it raised there from a technical engineering point of view. I understand the concerns. But I guess, as you say, but based on that detailed advice and that document, council satisfied that they have addressed our codes here.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
And the other concern I have, and it's very well addressed in the application, but the access for the lower blocks to have access to the Channel Highway, to me, doesn't seem like the best outcome from this development because of site distances and the fact that there is already a lot of traffic there, and a proposal, I understand, from the metro to increase the size of the bus stop in that area and to provide crossing for children to go across to the school. I'm wondering if this is going to provide a conflict with cars coming out of this subdivision on main straight onto the Channel Highway.
Mr. Donovan.
Thanks, Pete. Our engineers have looked at both the Channel Highway and also Stuart Crescent in terms of their designs and how they function and the engineering codes. It's their view that they are adequate. We all recognise the Channel Highway's issues, as we do here in town as well, when we seem to be advised by everybody when we put new applications through about the issues facing the current highways and how congested they are. In this case, the numbers are very low. I'm not saying it makes them safer, but in some regard, they are low numbers. And as I said, our advice is from our engineers that based on the road parameters, including sight lines and travel speeds and distances, the application, again, complies to our codes and engineering standards.
Thank you. And my last question relates to the environmental situation, where we have a site with 40 spotted pardalotes and eagles and other threatened vegetation types, and yet we're allowing them to be removed for physical reasons. And have all options been explored to be able to not take these trees down and not to have an impact on the environment?
Mr. Donovan.
Have all options been explored? It's our view, looking at the application, that we have looked at options in terms of what can be developed. It's a matter of, you might form a view in your own mind as to what your options are, but in terms of moving blocks around, having less blocks, etc., but I guess the scheme does convey certain development rights and expectations. So from our point of view, we have looked at that. We think what they've done is a good, reasonable, best outcome in terms of all those matters you would look at in terms of what's relevant to subdivide a block of land that's zoned low-density residential. So from that regard, yes. We have also, as you'll see in the report, our environmental team have spent a considerable time analysing the site in all its aspects, not just the area being disturbed with the new blocks. We've put on a range of conditions again that we hope protect and also provide for ongoing management of those other areas to the north and the west of the block as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions, starting off with 12.5.2 about roads, and it says in performance criteria P1J, multiple escape routes are provided if in a bushfire-prone area. Are we able to just hear a bit about how that relates to this proposal?
Mr. Donovan.
Thanks, Mayor. Not being a bushfire expert, I'll do my best. So yes, you're right. That's part of a performance criteria, which is looking at the arrangement where you don't have where you're providing internal locks, perhaps, and other matters. The application has been supported by an accredited bushfire person. They have provided a full report, which has shown council that the area is appropriately designed in terms of the relevant bushfire issues. I'm not the expert. I'm sorry, I can't tell you where those 2 points are at this stage, but the application was certainly supported by that report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. Just to race through my contribution here, I have spent a lot of time thinking about this proposal, and I've been contacted by both local residents in opposition and also from the developer. The report, to my mind, left some questions unanswered, but for me, many of those issues have ultimately been addressed in the report, such as landslide and traffic. One area in terms of the landslide, so I won't spend too much time on either landslide or traffic, but interesting to note that when we're looking at landslide, nobody's really talked about what will happen when you remove so many large trees and what those root systems will do, even though they are outside of the headscarp of the Taruna Landslide Complex. I think there's just more work to be done, but that's for another day. Fundamentally, I disagree with the staff advice on this occasion, and I think that this proposal does not comply with the planning scheme because it will have significant impact upon high conservation values that exist on the site and therefore does not comply with E10.8.1. And I think ultimately we need to discuss whether this subdivision is designed and located to minimise impacts on priority biodiversity as it is required to, and that's where you get a lot of nuance and within the proposal that you know, just respectfully, I disagree with what we've heard so far, that it complies. I think it does not. Let's first start by looking at the local area objectives and desired future character statement. These are listed on page 8 and 9 of the report, and they say for Taruna, quote, the relative low residential density of Taruna will be maintained and any significant change to higher densities is to be avoided. The implementation strategy for that says infill development should be encouraged only on sites convenient to urban facilities and services. Areas within Taruna that are zoned low density residential are to be developed so that both visual landscape and natural environmental values are protected. The implementation strategy for that says existing larger lot sizes are to be retained in order that there's sufficient land to accommodate substantial vegetation on site and provide for the desired landscape and natural amenity with only minimal expansion of the existing urban footprint permitted. And the implementation strategy of the desired future character statement, clause 12.1.3, says, quote, multi-unit housing is to be discouraged other than in the vicinity of the Taruna Shopping Centre. So on this point, I think we need to think about what counts as in the vicinity and what counts as minimal expansion, and that's where I beg to differ with the council planning officer on this occasion. It's worth noting that the officer report does indeed state that, in the opinion of the council's planning officer, the cul-de-sac design is recognised as providing minimal impact on the site's biodiversity values. And so for me, that's where the tension exists. Secondly, in terms of the compliance with the Biodiversity Code, and we're looking now at pages 21 and 22, and this is where I think the proposal fails to comply, E10.8.1. And this is a quote, the proposal cannot comply with A1 as vehicular access, building areas, services and bushfire hazard management encroach into the biodiversity protection area. Therefore, the proposal must be assessed against P1, A, B and C. And the planning officer's report notes that while one blue gum providing a foraging resource for the swift parrot is proposed for removal, the tree will be critically damaged by installation of infrastructure and it's not feasible to retain it. This This issue is not mitigated, in my opinion, by the proposal, and therefore it fails to comply with the scheme. The planning scheme says nothing specifically about swift parrots, of course, but it's worth noting here that there are fewer swift parrots left on Earth than white rhinos, giant pandas or mountain gorillas. So I think, I hope that somebody in the state government is putting themselves in the shoes of an international onlooker and thinking about whether that would stand the test of time in terms of the history books, but that's not a matter for the planning scheme. Just imagine, though, if a developer in the Congo or Rwanda wanted to build some extra...
Point of order.
Yeah, okay. Caught up on that. Let's return to the planning scheme, and I'll withdraw that. Thank you for catching me out on it. On page 22, and this relates to the planning scheme, while there is a wedge-tailed eagle nest within 800 metres, this nest is out of line of sight and no mitigation measures are considered necessary. This, to me, is one of those assumptions where, in this case, I simply disagree that it's not having minimal impact. I think that there's significant impact. And, in fact, if you look at DPIPWE's website and the threatened species link, it says about wedge-tailed eagles that, yes, the total adult population is less than 1,000, and also that any disturbance, even many hundreds of metres away, can cause breeding birds to temporarily leave eggs and chicks or at risk or even desert the nest for years. So we're looking here at, you know, one definition of minimal impact, and then it's in complete contravention with another definition of minimal impact, which says even from hundreds of metres away, you can cause disturbance. So also on page 22 of the report, it talks about clearance and conversion or disturbance will not substantially detract from the conservation status of the biodiversity values. And again, I believe that that expression, you know, will not substantially detract, I think it's doing some very heavy lifting. I believe that it will substantially detract. The report admits, in fact, that it will detract, but it makes the claim that the detraction will not be substantial, and I respectfully disagree. There were, in my opinion, alternative designs that were available but were not considered that would avoid and minimise impacts on natural values and allow the proposal to comply with E10.8.1, and a lesser impact could have been achieved. It was not, and therefore it does not comply. So because the proposal does not comply with the Biodiversity Code performance criteria, I'll be voting against the Planning Officer's recommendation. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, that you fit that in the time limit.
I know, it's a miracle. I'm not sure, just I'm told. There you go. I was starting to wonder if you're being timed or not.
Thank you, I did have to listen. Thank you, Mayor. So, firstly, Councillor Cordova, from what I could speedily hear what he said, I think the point raised in regards to... Sorry, I've just written my points there. Sorry, excuse me. The point that he raised in regards to the future character statement, I think, is an important consideration and understanding, and probably the reason as well why we've had so many residents of community in Taruna actually contact council via email or phone, because they are very passionate. They have a passion for the statements in the future character statement. I have a couple of questions, Mayor. The first one is, and sorry if I missed this before when Councillor Fox raised the question, around who owns the environmental living zone? Is that private behind the development?
Mr Donovan.
Yes, it is. So the site itself is... Is it possible to bring up the plans, Mayor? No? Okay,
no.
All right, technology.
I've got a...
to describe the site, you have the area that's directly off Stuart Crescent. Near the reservoir, which then runs down to the Channel Highway, thank you. And then the land behind going up the hill, yes, is all one block and privately owned by the same owner. And the land behind it also is privately owned and zoned environmental living. So the whole area on both sides and this site itself is privately owned and environmental living zone. Now, the residential low density zone tends to roughly coincide with where Stuart Crescent is. And if you can just imagine that projecting south-southwest through the site, that gives you some idea of, I guess, of the small part of the site so densely residential to the highway and Stuart Crescent, and then the bulk of the property up the hill is environmental living.
Okay, thank you. So in regards to some of the responses that you answered through your Mayor, from Councillor Fox, in regards to the future development of this area, it's quite, I guess, unknown, but there could be future development. And I guess in raising the thoughts and questions that... community has raised in regards to the public open space and the walkability and the linkages, I think sometime, well, it is important that we do consider the future, but I understand in the matter sitting as a planning authority, we can be limited to what we see before us. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. It is an unfortunate matter, and I think something that the community sometimes doesn't understand, and it's hard when we're doing sort of piecemeal subdivisions to then get that broader picture. So in the future, with perhaps this decision we're making tonight, and if there is future development in the environmental living zone, what would the impact be in regards to this development not having those linkages?
Dr. Stevenson. I'm going to try and break this down a little bit. In terms of the public open space policy, which is what has been used to make the decision around whether we took a cash in lieu over land, that is bigger picture. But we have no strategic documents, no known development going to occur there, and the nature of environmental living zone, which is the future zoning, makes it very difficult to develop. So on that basis, the officer's recommendation was that it didn't represent the best value for the community for us to invest in pathways there as opposed to take a contribution and work on our strategic pathways. So you're correct in that we have to consider the matter before us, but our public open space policy, which we apply, does have that broader strategic outlook, and that has been contemplated by the officers in making these recommendations.
Councillor Midgley. Okay, thank you. Just taking that in. The concern for me is the removal of the 5 high conservation trees, and I know that planning staff do not do this with absolutely thinking through thoroughly and hopefully discussion with the developer. But on pages 11 and 12, from my understanding, it does not meet the acceptable solutions for 5 high conservation trees. And so if it does not meet the performance criteria, then it becomes discretionary. So my understanding is the discretion is then the offset can be paid for the removal of these trees, or could we make a decision in a discretion that we retain these trees? And I'm just wondering for the community and perhaps my further understanding as well, is how, at what point do we make that decision that the offset is okay and meets the performance criteria?
Dr. Stevenson. I'll have a go to begin with, and then Tim can fill in the blanks through you, Mayor. So we have to work with the design that has been provided as part of the DA. So you can't assess what you haven't got before you. So the officers do try and work and provide suggestions about design changes where they can, and often developers do take those up. But you'll see in this report it does talk about some of the limitations, for example, where the existing water infrastructure is and things like that. So there will be limitations, and then ultimately when it comes to the recommendation around offset, or it is with the final design that has been submitted, ready for public consultation. Is that a fair summary, Mr. Donovan?
Mr. Donovan, don't be afraid to tell the gentleman.
And you can tell me I'm wrong.
No, not at all. I think it is a fair summary. I was just going to say a couple of things, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. Our staff, as you probably know, are very concerned about trees and actually go through that process very rigorously. They certainly do try and save them if they can from any disturbance and damage. They certainly do then also look at ways to mitigate damage and to keep them ongoing. So that's our first aim, is to do that. In this case, as the report says, we don't feel we're able to, for a range of reasons, which is you've heard before. So I guess our ultimate conclusion is what the report says. Yeah.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So it still is, I believe, discretionary. There's still a fine line in regards to the planning authority saying yes to that offset versus saying to the developer that the trees need to be retained and the development needs to change to retain the trees.
Can I draw your attention to a dot point on page 10? Below the table there, the second last paragraph,
in the first dot point. Given the location and alignment of existing services, redesigning the subdivision works is unlikely to enable the retention of these trees. I think that's quite a key point that I think Mr. Donovan was alluding to in terms of why we had to assess what was before us, but if we had, during that stage, gone back and asked them to redesign it, they couldn't have done it in a way, because of the configuration of the land and the services, to enable those trees to be retained. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Through you, Mayor, further to that, I've lost my train of thought. It'll come back. Hang on. You can only put a condition in that is achievable, ultimately. Otherwise, you're really saying we're refusing. So I think you need to keep in mind. Now, this report clearly says there isn't an alternative design. So if you... it is non-compliant. It has been offset through our policy around taking cash. There are conditions, but ultimately then the matter for council is, do we accept that, or are we saying no? I don't think you can expect to redesign or add conditions on the fly, so to speak. Those detailed conversations have happened before they get to this stage.
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
And a couple of further questions. So what if these trees were on the significant tree register? What would be any impact or
Dr. Stevenson.
Consideration in regards to that?
We would apply our policy in relation to that, and we would... there are exemptions under the planning scheme around even significant trees, so it wouldn't necessarily mean that the development could not proceed if it was a significant tree on our register.
Thank you.
Councillor Mitchell.
One further question, Mayor. Page 33, condition 10C2.
Page what, sorry? 33?
Page 33, condition 10C2. And my apologies for not bringing this to you prior. It was a conversation I had today, and I had a flat-out day. In regards to the sentence, the second sentence, removal of the trees, this is in regards to the white gum. I'm quite sure EV1, I think that's the white gum.
Can you give us the referring
to? Page 33.
Yep.
10C2. Yep. And the second sentence, removal of the tree, so this is in reference to tree EV1, which,
yes,
I'm quite sure is the white gum. Removal of the tree will only be approved where it can be demonstrated that it is not practically feasible to retain the tree. I understand the wording, and it's often, again, discretion, but how can we tighten this up to ensure that this white gum is retained? Is there any way this condition can be tightened to ensure the retaining of this white gum at all? And apologies for not bringing this to staff earlier.
Dr. Stevenson?
I will refer to Mr. Donovan, but in my reading, I'm not quite sure what else you could say. It still has to be approved, the removal of the tree. So it has to be demonstrated to the satisfaction of our officers that there's no practical alternative.
Mr. Donovan.
I agree. I don't see how you can have it further qualified, apart from what we've done. It needs our approval. They've got to demonstrate absolutely there's no other options and everything's been tried. So I can't provide any further words. I'm sorry, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And again, this is discussion with the community and a concern perhaps of a further loss of important habitat. As Councillor Cordova alluded to, we are in a climate crisis, and that's why we're making these points under our hat as a planning authority.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I think what Councillor Street said in his opening remarks quite often goes through without consideration, and that is that we as a planning authority sit here meeting after meeting, whether that is in Taroona, whether it's in Gordon or any place in between, that there are valid reasons for the community objecting and raising matters of concern. Nine times, well, I won't say nine times out of ten, perhaps five times out of ten, is closer to the mark that most of us don't agree with the proposal. However, it does fall within the planning scheme, and the case in question tonight. Now, I think I started getting emails a couple of months ago talking about the issues that the people in the area were going to be faced with if this subdivision went through or this development application went through. And they are alarming when you look at them, but the staff report, to my way of thinking, acknowledges and satisfies all the planning scheme issues that we are faced with. And we need to operate within the planning scheme. As I said before, it's not whether we like it or don't like it. We have to sit as a planning scheme, which doesn't help. The question that I have, and to me it still hasn't been addressed, I know it's outside the main part of the landslide risk area, but if we're going to disturb the soil, will the geo-environmental solutions report, does that measure up and does it concur with GHD's report? I ask that for the simple reason that we were told a number of years ago that one of the reasons the Channel Highway is still there is that the water and the other infrastructure in the ground that's kept everything, if you like, compact and together. Even though we have had breakages in those, and I think we lost all of our telecommunications a number of years ago because they were stretched to the limit. My concern is, if the lower part of Taroona went, let's say where the primary school is, does that then put more pressure on the land above, bearing in mind that we've got a water tank there as well, which obviously carries a lot of weight? So, from that, Mayor, I'd like to hear what Mr. Donovan has to say.
Mr. Donovan.
That's a tough one. I'm a town planner, obviously, so I don't know what else I can add in terms of the engineering technical matters. Mayor, with respect, I am limited in terms of what I can say to that particular question. The site's been assessed based on our existing code and what we know about it. So my reading of the expert's report is that they have considered clearly the adjacent area, and the report you referred to is known to them. They've looked at the implications of that. And as I said, we have tied through our conditions that report to the engineering design. So the geotechnical report made its independent recommendations, which weren't in the earlier engineering reports. So we've clearly tied them together. So I think all I can say is, from the council's point of view, we've done our best, I guess, to ensure that are aware of the risk and try and manage it best we can.
Thank you. Councillor Wass?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I probably am looking for some assurance. If this goes ahead and there'll be an extra five houses, in other words, there'll be six new houses on that property, if in 10 or 15 years they start to slide, I guess what I'm asking, who pays the ferryman?
Dr. Stevenson.
You can only make your decision with the best technically available information at the time. It's no different than the decisions we make which might be impacted by climate change. So, if we've got a technical report, we've conditioned it, in my view, and I think in case law view, we would have limited liability risk.
Councillor Wass.
Just to continue, Mayor. So your belief, Dr. Stevenson, is that council would not be held responsible, that the developer and his or her or their, it would go back to the insurance, And if that's the case, do we believe it should be listed as a potential landslip area on any of the titles to those properties?
Dr. Stevenson.
I'm pretty sure we have to note it on our 337 certificates. I'm just looking around. I certainly know that even if we're not compelled to, a lot of councils do make notation of such thing, and then it's full disclosure for any future buyers. It's probably... I'd have to look into that, Councillor Wass, but certainly... I'm pretty sure after the West Tamar incidences, landslip was introduced as a on part of the 337 certificates, but I'm happy to take that on notice.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I had quite a few questions, but a lot of them have been addressed. So one thing I'm still really feeling uncomfortable about, though, is clause 12.5.2 with the roads. It has been brought up, but I would just like a little bit more clarification on J. Multiple escape routes are provided if in a bushfire-prone area. You mentioned that there's a bushfire report. Does the bushfire report... does it... what's the word that I'm looking for? How does the bushfire report relate to the scheme? Because it doesn't say here in the scheme multiple escape routes are provided if in a bushfire-prone area or unless a bushfire report says something otherwise, does it? It doesn't say that there. It just simply says that there is multiple escape routes provided. So how... Trump, that was the word I was looking for. How does the bushfire report trump what it says here in the scheme?
Mr. Donovan? You looked hesitant, so I wasn't sure.
Well, no, it's just, yeah, it's a particular question. That's not my expertise, as I said before, but I'm just to answer that last question, which I can. So the various experts' reports don't trump the scheme. They have to demonstrate compliance to the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of looking at it, I think. Certainly the scheme has standards and performance criteria. So you would produce a expert's report to demonstrate compliance to the performance criteria, if that's the case, with a range of things like road design and et cetera. So in this case, what we've done, I guess, as staff in looking at the range of criteria, performance criteria, and looking at that particular criteria, is they have supported the application with a credited bushfire report. It provides the appropriate advice in terms of the estate and its design in terms of bushfire. So we've taken that to be its compliance. I'd be careful in applying an understanding to certain terms without being the expert here to give you advice. It talks about multiple escape routes. It doesn't say roads. So I think there's an expectation that when people read that, they assume there's going to be another road providing another exit. It doesn't say that. It talks about escape routes. And I guess I'm not the bushfire expert, so that's our rationale. We've had the report. It supports the design. It said it complies to all the bushfire criteria, and that's our basis for saying it complies to the scheme's requirements.
Okay, but just that's a little bit right. Further... Did the bushfire report address multiple escape routes? Was there a section in that report that actually addressed that?
Dr. Stevenson.
I can't give you that level of detail either, but what I would say, these are the performance criteria. The whole idea of bringing a discretionary matter to council is to say it hasn't met the performance criteria, we've assessed it, and through conditioning in this way... we can make it comply. I would argue that the exits from this into Stewart's Crescent and Channel Highway are no different than any of the adjacent properties, as long as they can get onto the road. So as Mr. Donovan said, it's routes, not roads. The roads aren't changing for the residents either, so the other residents. So I would suggest it's really about can they get out
generally in the same way that their neighbours can, and that doesn't require an additional road exiting in a different way.
Okay, thank you for the answer. It's helped me understand that. The other concern that I had was, again, sorry, to do with landslip. The landslip assessment report, did that take into account the removal of the five trees?
Mr. Donovan?
From my reading of it, the simple answer is no. It doesn't actually say, I've looked at the five trees. What it did do, though, was look at the sorts of disturbances a subdivision would effect on the land, including all the works. So, from our point of view, we're of a view that it did address those sorts of concerns. There's a range of works required to be done where you would to achieve this sort of subdivision with water and sewerage and roads and access and driveways. So the geotech report looked at that depth of disturbance, and that's what would be involved. So, but it doesn't have a section that talks about taking out five trees, no.
I think that's really concerning. If this is a landslip area and it's above the school, and we're going to take out these really big trees which are really holding, you know, that part of Taruna up, if we're taking them out and the landslip assessment report didn't look at that scenario, then I think that's something that we need to be really worried about. Based on that, I'm not sure if I can support this. I know that, you know, we're supposed to because the staff have demonstrated that it meets all the criteria, but I just have too much concern about that. Is there any way we can request that the landslip report is redone and take into account the removal of the five trees? Is it too late? Have I missed the boat?
So we're not able to do that because we have to make a decision tonight, because the clock is ticking and we have a statutory time frame in which we need to consider this. So we're not able to do that. Mr. Donovan, did you want to say something, add something? Absolutely.
I was just trying to catch the attention of Acting GM, but I agree with your comment, Mayor, but I think in this situation you could impose an additional requirement on the condition that prior to the works commencing that they do provide the information you asked for.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay, so in order for that to... If you want that to happen, we would need to take a short adjournment to enable an additional condition to be drafted, because we need to ensure, obviously, that it is appropriately drafted, and we know we can get into difficulty if we try and draft it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So
I do apologise. I am sort of new to this process and I am sort of learning about, you know, the best way to do this, but I'm really concerned about the landslip in that area. So
okay, I'm not going to adjourn it straight away because I wanted to ask some questions as well, and then we will look to adjourn for a short period of time. I was looking at, on page 20 of the report, now I'm going to go back to find it. It's in relation to the landslip as well. Let me find where it was. No, not page 20. Hang on. There was reference... I thought it's page 20. Hang on. I'm in the wrong page. When you've got an electronic copy, it's all different. Okay. So there is reference within the report. Now I can't find the page number because I've obviously written down the wrong one. There's reference within the report, within the body of it, to say that in relation to the landslip hazard, it references an erosion standard, I guess, if you like, 3798-2007. It is page 20. Thank you. I think I've confused myself by writing down the wrong page. Thank you. Where is it? Top of page 20. Thank you. Yes, thanks, Councillor Fox. So there are the three dot points there which talk about that
complying with that standard for sediment and erosion control, that large quantities of cattle fuel should not be used in the formation of lots, and also the proposed development should be constructed in accordance with the Australian Geomechanics Society guidelines for good hillside construction practices. And it says that conditions are recommended for inclusion in any permit issued requiring these, but I couldn't find those specific ones in the permit. So, Dr. Stevenson.
The condition references the landslip report, and which has conditions
which has those in it. Okay, thank you. There was a condition on 4, and I didn't know whether that would cover it in the that. Look, I just to finish before we then adjourn to see if we can get some words around that. Just for my contribution, I just wanted to acknowledge the representations that we have had from the Taruna community, because I think they've obviously given this a lot of thought and they've raised some significant issues. I wish that we were able to, as a planning authority, have that discretion to get developers to change their plans to get around some of the issues of tree removal, because that's what, as a community, I know our community wants, and I know that as councillors, that's what we would, the majority of us, would want as well. And this is one of those ones where we get really stuck on, we're wearing our hats as a planning authority, as other members have said, and we don't have the ability to make the developer do something different. We can only assess what is before us. I think one of the things that concerns me, and I know that we've had this discussion before, and I would actually like to ask the question because I don't know the answer to it and I feel like I should, but it seems to me that $500 as compensation for a tree to be removed is a very low sum, and I'm wondering when that threshold was set and when it was last increased, because it would seem to me that if we're going to resolve this problem moving forward, that we would need to increase that value in order to act as a disincentive for people to actually, for developers to work around trees rather than actually just think, oh well, for $500 I'll knock it down. So can someone give me some advice on... Thank you. Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, the sum would have been set when the policy last came to Council, and it's due to come again to quite soon. So it's just about up for review, so that is a good time to be thinking about how that figure was set. It's about how the cost of replacing a tree, so generally, council would say that to get a tree, the likelihood of getting a tree back to that size of maturity obviously takes a long time. We would expect 5 trees to be planted for every one that's lost, to cover the risk that at least one of those will get to maturity. And so, it was based on a figure around the costs for council through the Kingborough Environmental Fund to put that tree in the ground, to manage its health into the future on our land, and to get a tree of equal size sometime in the future. So we will be reviewing those as the policy comes back to council soon.
So I take it, because as far as I know from the time I've been on council, it's been at about that level. We haven't increased it for... Can you remember the last time it was increased?
No, the only increase I'm aware of is we added an administration fee to the cost per hectare rate where bushland communities are being removed. So we did that potentially at the last review, I think, but I don't think that we have increased the rate because it's not there necessarily as a disincentive, it's there to offset the loss. So it's about the cost of getting a similar value back into the landscape.
Thank you.
So it's potentially doing something a bit different.
Thank you. I think that's very informative, and when you say soon, I hope that's like this year. potentially? Okay. I think that's given us food for thought, because there appears to be other jurisdictions where it's it is aimed at being a disincentive. So I think that's a conversation we need to have at a later time. So thank you for clarifying that for me. Obviously, that's not something that we can change for this application, but I think that gives us some guidance for moving forward. As I said, I have some difficulty with this one as well, in terms of some of the issues that have been identified, but I'm hoping if we now take a short break, I can already see Mr. Donovan writing away over there. So do you think, Mr. Donovan, could I be guided by you in 5 minutes? Be thank you. All right, so it's 6:45, so we will adjourn for 5 minutes. Thank you. What's wrong? So I'm going to resume the meeting. Could you just confirm that the audio has commenced? Thank you. So the meeting has resumed at 6:59 p.m. We have a an amendment. If you could just bring that up. So I'll read that so that everyone can be aware of it. So we have an amendment that then I'll ask for somebody to move it once we've read it out. The amendment is that an additional condition be added before the current condition two, namely that an amended landslide risk assessment by a suitably qualified person shall be submitted for the approval of the manager development services prior to the commencement of any on-site works addressing the removal of the five trees identified as being impacted by the subdivision works and the subsequent impacts of that on the assessment and including any further required risk mitigation measures. Do I have a mover and a seconder for those for that amendment? Move Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright, did you want to speak to the amendment?
No, just that I think this will make us all sleep better at night, knowing that an assessment is looking at what the development is actually proposing, and that is to remove some trees.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers on the amendment? Otherwise, I will put Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So I will be... I'm speaking against this amendment, and my reason is that even though I appreciate the intention behind it, irrespective of whether this is a condition that's in or not, in my opinion, the subdivision is non-compliant with the planning scheme because it doesn't meet E 10.8.1. So even were this to pass, it wouldn't do anything to improve the lack of compliance, as I say, with the planning scheme. So I think that it's the intention behind it is very reasonable, but I'm speaking against it because, as far as I'm concerned, this subdivision is not appropriate. And so I'll be speaking against this amendment and also voting against the proposal. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I'm happy to support the amendment, but I just wanted to add what I think is a word of caution here, and that is that we seem to be assuming that because something hasn't been specifically addressed by a qualified professional, that it hasn't been considered at all if it hasn't been expressly considered. I mean, the geotechnical engineer has had the DA, they've seen the development that's proposed and they've made an assessment based on the DA. Simply because they haven't specifically said, I have considered X, doesn't necessarily follow that they haven't considered it at all. I just wouldn't want us to fall into the trap into the future of second-guessing that qualified professional advice on a regular basis. I mean, I think it's going to give some councillors comfort this time around, though I suspect that the geotechnical engineer is simply going to come back and say much what I just said then, which is I've had the development application, I reviewed the development application, of course I saw that there were five trees removed and that was the basis on which I did the report. but I'm happy to go along with it because it's going to give some people some comfort, and that's great. Just caution doing it as a matter of course into the future. It's not necessarily something that it's not a discretionary planning matter where reasonable minds might differ. It really is qualified professional engineering advice that we're looking at. So again, I keep repeating myself. While I'm happy to support it, I wouldn't want it to become a precedent for future applications.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Gladewright, you've got your light on. Did you have... No? Okay. So I'll put the amendment. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Fox. The amendment is as printed on the screen and as I read out earlier. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour of the amendment? In favour is Councillors Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against, Councillors Cordova and Wass. The amendment is carried. We are back on the substantive motion, and I think I'm correct in saying that everybody has spoken, so unless anyone has any further questions, I will return to Councillor Street to sum up. Does anyone have any further questions? Councillor Street, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Look, only to thank my colleagues for their input around the table on this application this evening, and to finish by saying one thing, which is that there are a lot of red herrings in this debate and a lot of ways that we can try and weasel around the requirements and the planning scheme requirements on matters like this. I don't feel like tonight is one of those occasions where those really stack up. I think the landslip issue is one of those, and I suspect that we're going to be told that as well. Respectfully, while I thank Councillor Cordova for his contribution, I do disagree. I think that it does fit within the planning scheme, and this is, again, one of those things that I was talking about where reasonable minds might differ. We're not talking about whether something's engineered correctly or not, and where two engineers might differ on that. We're talking about things where two reasonable councillors who are put in the position of assessing a DA might differ. So I do thank him for his input, albeit I disagree. So, Mayor, the DA before us is not one that I think anybody takes great pleasure in, but it is one that it fits within the planning scheme, and I commend it to council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I'll put the motion now. It has the recommendation on page 26 with, I think it was 26 different conditions as part of that, including the amended condition that we have placed on it. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
I'll have a show of hands. All those in favour of the motion is Councillors Wass, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against is Councillors Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. With that, the Planning Authority adjourns at 7:06 p.m. and the open session recommences at 7:06 p.m. and we will invite Councillor Bastone back into the room. We move now to... And thank you to the members of the public gallery who were with us this evening. And Councillor Bastone has rejoined the meeting at 7:07 p.m. We move now to page 54, motions of which notice has been given. There is a notice of motion headed Poker Machines, which has been submitted by Councillor Cordova, and an officer's response from Dr. Stevenson. Do I have a mover for that
so
motion?
Moved.
Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Tonight I bring the Council's attention to the issue of electronic gaming machines, EGMs, otherwise known as pokies or poker machines. With the passing of the Future Gaming Markets Bill through the House of Assembly of the State Parliament this last week, it seems likely that very soon, for the first time in decades, the monopoly on legal gambling in this state will significantly change in 2023. The legislation ends the Federal Group's poker machine monopoly, allowing pubs and clubs to own the machines through individual licences. This means that there is a chance that we will see venue owners with pubs and clubs in Kingborough seek to acquire licences to have extra or to add pokies in venues within our municipality. So we know that poker machines are a state issue and the legislation is state legislation, so what can local government do? Well, the truth is we need to do something. We need to send a clear signal that pokies cause harm and that we as a Kingborough council oppose the introduction of any new poker machines in Kingborough. There are currently licences for up to 50 poker machines being held across two venues in Kingborough, and I personally think that that is more than enough. We know that the average that each machine takes in is about $50,000 per year, and whilst not all gamblers are problem gamblers, we know for a fact that poker machines are designed to addict and rigged to lose. According to the Productivity Commission, at least one in six people who regularly use poker machines are likely to develop a problem with gambling. And that problem causes enormous social pathologies and flow-on effects that harm the families, the businesses, the social services, the health system and the charities that are leaned upon to pick up the pieces. Meanwhile, the money is taken away from the community, taken away from vulnerable residents in our community, and mostly it gets siphoned away by rich owners who never have to deal with the damage that they've inflicted. During the 96 days of the COVID-19 lockdown, it's estimated that here in Kingborough, $618,000 that would have otherwise been lost to the pokies were saved. That's money that was instead available to be spent on food, shelter and clothing for the families of those people affected. It's money that could be spent locally on things that help build society rather than damage it. I used to work for Anglicare's Social Action Research Centre, and it's organisations like Anglicare, the Neighbourhood House Network and the Salvos who know firsthand the damage that these insidious poker machines cause. More pokies in Kingborough would result in more harm to people in Kingborough. And so I think this council needs to send a strong message that we oppose pokies in pubs and clubs. And indeed, we have done just that in 2016 by joining the Community Voice on Pokies Machine Coalition, along with other councils. So there's precedent for this. We joined it with Brighton, Glenorchy, Hobart, Southern Midlands and Meander Valley councils back in 2016. So my motion tonight is the logical next step. The motion simply says that if a venue applies to the Liquor and Gaming Branch asking for a venue licence for pokies in Kingborough, that our council will make a representation, as we are entitled to do as a key stakeholder, saying that we oppose them. It's simple, it's effective and it's a powerful message. So now more than ever, this council needs to know what we will do if a venue applies for poker machines within our municipality by the community interest test. When a new venue applies, they will have to undergo this test, and that was introduced in October of 2016, just after this council signed up to the Anti-Pokies Coalition. And according to the Joint Select Committee on Future Gaming Markets, quote, the intent of that test is to give local communities a greater voice in determining the future location of electronic gaming machines in their community. The community interest test is applied to all new applications to operate poker machines in Tasmania, and local councils play an important, they are an important participant in any community interest test. I have spoken with the Tasmanian Liquor and Gaming Commission previously, and they assured me that a local council in the area in which they want to put in pokies is indeed a significant stakeholder, and there would be an expectation that we would provide a submission. And my motion simply seeks to formalise that and make council commit to putting on the record that we are opposed to pokies in pubs and clubs, which we already have done in 2016, along with those other councils that I mentioned. Pokies cause harm, and when the law changes to allow individual pubs and clubs to apply for their licences to get poker machines, our council should stick to our guns and publicly reaffirm that we're a council that opposes any new poker machines in Kingborough. The venues that currently are licensed for pokies in Kingborough were estimated to have taken $2.5 million out of the pockets of residents and visitors to Kingborough in 2018-19. Regular polling has found that 4 in 5 Tasmanians think that poker machines in pubs and clubs have a negative impact in the community. And in 2017, polling in this state electorate of Franklin, of which Kingborough is a part, that polling in 2017 found that 81.5% of Tasmanians in this electorate thought that poker machines should be phased out of pubs and clubs altogether. Enough is enough. We don't need any more pokies in pubs and clubs. I implore you to please pass this motion so that Kingborough Council can send a clear message that we don't want any new poker machines in Kingborough's pubs and clubs. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further speakers, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is the third time you've brought a notice of motion like this to council, Councillor Cordova. And this is the third time I'll argue against it, because it is not the responsibility of council to regulate liquor and gaming activities in Tasmania. We have, as you have mentioned, a branch of a state government department whose responsibility it is to do that. As far as I'm aware, they are doing that. And harm minimisation is something that, from what I can tell, the state government is focused on. Alcohol, tobacco and other drugs also cause a significant amount of harm to people in our community. That's why for harm minimisation, that's why harm minimisation measures are also in place for those types of activities. They're restricted to adults who are 18 years or over. There are warning signs. There are lots of things that are done to educate our community, the adults in our community, about the harm related to alcohol, drugs and tobacco. Likewise, there are lots of measures in place and information available to educate our community about the harms of poker machines. I'm not saying that I don't think there is harm associated with poker machines, because there clearly is. Likewise, there is harm associated with the use of alcohol and tobacco, and a significant portion of our community engages in regular drinking and regular smoking activities. So in terms of your notice of motion that Council A acknowledges that pokies cause harm, yep, no worries. That's fine, take your point. As I acknowledge that other things in our community that are regulated by the relevant authority can cause harm, and significant harm and significant cost to taxpayers and ratepayers and members of our community. I don't like the fact that your notice of motion is based on the premises that that Council joined the Tasmanian Community Coalition in 2016, now referred to as Community Voice on Pokies Reform. I wasn't on Council in 2016, so I don't know the background to it, but I have made some inquiries because I wanted to further understand the background to it. I don't think anyone has ever gone to a meeting of that coalition. I'm aware it doesn't meet anymore, and so to base your argument on that, it doesn't win me over. Commits to opposing any additional pokies in Kingborough by making a submission whenever a community interest test is being undertaken. Look, that's not part of our role. We're roads, rates and rubbish. We're local government issues. Pokie machines are regulated by a different arm of government, and I'm happy and satisfied that they're doing what they can to minimise the harm caused to our community. So I won't be supporting your notice of motion.
Thank you. For the speakers, Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I was there in 2016, and I certainly supported this motion at the time. And we were given facts and figures about the amount of people involved in gambling in Kingborough and the amount of money that was lost to this community and the social harm that it caused. And for that matter, I think it is a council responsibility, because one of our mandates is to look after the social well-being of our community, as Councillor Westwood does very well through her Road Safety Committee, and also with the, for example, the installation of CCTV cameras. It's part of our responsibility to look after our community and to support the weakest members of our community, as Councillor Reed does so well through the Access Committee. So I do think it really does lie within our ambit to have this motion on the table, and I do thank Councillor Cordova for bringing it to our attention. I guess I've personally seen the harm it causes. It's often to lonely people who feel they need to go to a place where they can see lights and colour and movement and feel they're participating. It's a bit like the younger generation now who gamble more online because they're more used to telephones, computers, etc. They feel they've got friends through the internet, but... And I guess gamblers might feel the same way, instant gratification. And I think it's important that we have a limit on that, and that we try to maintain our social venues as they are, as social venues, where people look each other in the eye. I was listening to a program about the Longley Hotel yesterday, where they had a meeting. They're looking after the fire, local fire brigade in that area, and the locals mentioned the fact that they liked to go there because there were no pokies and people actually talked to each other and made friends and communicated about issues that they all felt strongly about or just enjoyed each other's company. And that's the old-fashioned feeling that one used to get at a local pub. We have quite a few pubs without pokies, and I think we should try and maintain that. And that's why I think we should, as a council, support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Further speakers, Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I'd just like to understand the practicalities of this motion, please. When a venue is wanting to get pokies in their venue, what is the actual process, and are we involved in that at all?
No, we currently have no involvement.
Okay, so I completely appreciate the sentiment behind this and I wholeheartedly support that, but given that we don't actually have any practical involvement in that process, I can't see how I can support this.
No, well, Councillor Cordova, did you want to speak to that?
Simply to say that this motion is committing us to have a practical involvement, which is that when a venue wants pokies, they have to get a licence, and as part of that licence they have to advertise in the newspaper for 14 days calling for submissions, just like with a development application almost. And this motion is saying that if we see in the newspaper that a venue within Kingborough wants pokies, that we'll write a submission saying, yeah, we don't want more pokies in Kingborough. That's what the motion's about.
Thank you. Councillor Gladright, here. Did you want to continue?
So just to clarify, what you're asking us to do in this motion then is just write a submission. It's not asking us to be involved in any other way.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's my understanding of, yep.
Okay, thank you for that.
Further speakers, Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I've considered this long and hard. I know pokies can cause harm. I know alcohol causes harm to more people outside them than themselves, with cigarette addiction as well, that generally hurts themselves and those close around that do the passive smoking. I guess what I'm trying to say is we can't wrap everyone up in cotton wool. Since European settlement in Australia, Australians would bet on two flies climbing up a wall or a window. It's in our nature. When you look at horse racing, probably 30 or years ago, there were a lot of issues with horse racing. But there's not so many people now indulging in horse racing, and horse racing is not really an issue anymore because people have moved on. I noted what Councillor Fox said. It's all right, we have online gambling. It only hurts the young adults and the teenagers. That, to me, is the biggest issue that we face, is online gambling. We don't know who is reaping the benefits of online gambling. We assume, and from world information, crime and terrorism are to the top of the list. So if we're going to get our young people to go and do online gambling, which to me is more addictive, then we're going to be faced with more cashed up crime and more cashed up terrorism. The government has made some changes, and it's not to say that the government will not continue to make changes. And it may be that you can, your betting amount will be reduced, the time that you will take will be reduced. And certainly when you talk around to the people in this municipality and when you talk to clubs and pubs, most of them don't want pokies. So why do you want to impose an automatic opposition to anyone that would set up, even though the parameters around that new place of pokies could be, in your own eyes, satisfactory? I think we're making changes, or trying to make changes, into the future, and we shouldn't be doing that. Our community will tell us whether they want it or don't want it by the foot traffic. If they want pokies, they will go and enjoy them, or otherwise. If they don't, they won't. So I'm vexed with this one. It's not an easy topic, but as Australians, as I said in my opening remarks, we gamble on anything. We don't stop at that. We also have, most people would have a flutter once, twice, three, four times a week in whatever it's called, Tats Lotto. Are we going to stop that too? Because people get hurt in that as well. So where do we go? Where do we draw the line? So we might as well say Australia will be gambling free and there'll be no gambling. And I'll be behind the fence laughing at you because it's not going to work. So on that basis, I would suggest that we should oppose this motion.
Thank you. Are there further speakers? Oh, we've got Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Bastien, because I think you've got a question you indicated, Councillor Westwood.
Yes, I do have some questions. So given Council currently is not involved in the regulation of gaming in Kingborough, which member of our staff would be monitoring the weekend newspapers to identify when a 14-day notice that a application for a gaming licence has been lodged?
Dr. Stevenson.
The communications officer and I both review the paper, including the advertorials. I would hope that as a significant stakeholder, if there was to be, that we might be contacted directly by Liquor and Gaming, but other than that, there's no active other way that I can guarantee it. I don't know whether Councillor Cordova knows whether they contact councils generally.
Councillor Cordova.
In my conversation last year with Liquor and Gaming Branch, they said that councils, any local council where a venue is going to be that's undergoing a community interest test would be considered, quote, a significant stakeholder. So they didn't explicitly say that they would notify you, but I assume if you're, according to them, a significant stakeholder, they've got to notify somebody in addition to the Mercury newspaper, so I would anticipate that they would contact.
Thank you. And then assuming we would be contacted so that we wouldn't need a specific policy to dictate that we must monitor the weekend newspapers for a 14-day notification every weekend, assuming we were notified, how much time is it likely to take to make a submission whenever a community interest test is undertaken?
Dr. Stevenson.
It could be very simple. It could be simply referring to this council decision and so have a broad brush-based approach. So that would be minimal amount of time. It would be almost a standard letter. I suggest that would be probably the approach we would take if we were resource-stretched. If we had additional capacity at the time, we might look at our local demographics and provide some background data in that sense.
Thank you. So we're proposing a rubber stamp standard response to every single application, regardless of where it is or the size of it, the number of pokie machines, whether the community wants it or not. If we didn't provide a rubber stamp approach, how much spare capacity does the communications officer have to provide a response?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, it wouldn't be the communications officer doing the response, just more providing an alert. It would probably fall to someone else in my team in that sense. And, yes, in terms of a detailed response, often there are conflicting agendas, but we do submissions on a number of other matters. What would be more difficult, I guess, if we were resource constrained is the thorough analysis on in relation to a specific site as opposed to Kingborough broadly.
Thank you.
Councillor Bastien and then Councillor Midgley.
As an older member of the community, I'm becoming more and more shocked with people trying to take away my rights, my liberties to make my own decisions. And more are we becoming a nanny state. Now, I acknowledge that pokies cause harm, but I also acknowledge that it is a choice that people have. You know, you cannot say you can't drive your car at 50 k's an hour because if you do, that might hurt someone. There are limits constantly, and I think we have to just sit down and say some people or all people have the rights to make their own decisions on many things. So I will not be supporting this motion. Sorry, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I wasn't going to speak, but just a couple of points. I think council is more than roads, rates and rubbish, and I do follow Meg Webb, MLP, and agree with all that she has to say, and just a piece from when she was the Social Action and Research Centre Manager for Anglicare. The last point from this report, we don't need pokies, they should be removed from our suburbs as soon as the current licence agreement expires.
Thank you. Are there further speakers? If not, I'll just make my contribution before we put the motion. I have in the past tried to be consistent with an approach about things that are in our remit and things that aren't, but then I realised that I have sometimes, that's caused me some conflict, because for those members who were here on council when the Liquor Licensing Board put a granted a liquor licence for the motorcycle club rooms on Browns Road, we had absolutely no opportunity as a council to have input into that, and when the operating hours of that, whether it would be granted and then what the operating hours would be. And that to me was something that we had significant issue with, because there could be, in our view collectively, there were flow-on effects about, you know, parents with children travelling to and from school on that road, or the hours that, and we came to the view that there could be harm done because of the fact that the that had been granted, and to my frustration and to many others, that we didn't have an opportunity as a council to say that that wasn't appropriate for our community. And so I've kind of come full circle on this, and I think that I'm glad that Councillor Midgley has mentioned the work that the Honourable Meg Webb has done in this space for a long period of time, not just since she's been in Parliament but in her previous role, because there is no doubt that we are aware that pokies cause harm. And I think that if there is a community interest test, then we should indicate that as a council we don't believe that there should be more. Because it's very well to say it's a matter of choice, but it seems that every other month you read in the paper that somebody has committed a crime, and when you keep reading and keep reading, at the heart of that is that they have a gambling problem. And for a lot of those people, particularly women, it seems that it's poker machines that they have engaged with. And I would do away with online gaming as well, because I think that's even more of a trap, because you can do it from anywhere. I welcome the chance that we could have an opportunity to speak on behalf of council about this, and so I will be supporting this notice of motion. Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly to say that we've had a good debate, and I thank everyone for their contributions. We've heard about the idea of, you know, your rights and your choice, and I'd make the point that there are still two venues where you can do this, and also that there are appropriate places to do that. So, for example, in casinos, there are addictive gambling machines. In the same way that the appropriate place for guns would be in a gun club, the appropriate place, you know, for other harmful things is in the appropriate place for those harmful things. So we heard from Councillor Wass that there'll be foot traffic. We'll know that, you know, if the foot traffic is there, then, you know, we'll know. One in six regular users of these machines, according to the Productivity Commission, are likely to develop a gambling problem. One in six. And so is this an issue for us to look at? Fundamentally, I think we should turn our attention to the strategic plan, because that's been the central question of this whole conversation, is whether it's our business or not. Tell me this. Would allowing more poker machines in venues in Kingborough and remaining silent, allowing them unopposed, would that help or hinder the following parts of our strategic plan? Key priority area one, encourage a safe, healthy and connected community. Strategic outcome 1.1, 1.3 and 1.5, an inclusive community that has a strong sense of pride and local identity, a resilient community with the capacity to flourish, an active and healthy community with vibrant, clean local areas that provide social, recreational and economic opportunities. Would having more pokies in Kingborough help or hinder our explicit aims as outlined in our Kingborough Council strategic plan? I think it's unequivocal that pokies cause harm, and more pokies means more harm. So all this motion is asking us to do is write a simple submission. We do that on all kinds of issues, whether it's to Legat conferences or whether it's any number of things that council writes letters to people about. The vast majority, it's 4 out of 5 Tasmanians, don't want pokies in pubs and clubs, and it's just a failure of government that we still have pokies in pubs and clubs. So here at local government level, we do have a choice. We do have capacity. It's as simple as sending a strong statement that we don't want pokies in our pubs and clubs. We've already got enough, and we don't want any more. So really, I implore you to support this motion. It's simple, it's effective, and it's powerful. And it says we don't want any more pokies in Kingborough's pubs and clubs.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'll put the motion as printed in the agenda. It's moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
A show of hands is required. In favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox and Reid? And those against? Is Councillors Wass, Street, Bastone and Westwood? The motion is carried. Moving now to page 57, a notice of motion from Councillor Gladewright, headed Infrastructure Contributions. I have a mover in Councillor Gladewright. Do I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. Currently, all states other than Tasmania have a system in place for implementing infrastructure contributions supported by state-level legislation. Kingborough Council does not charge developers any amount towards the cost of infrastructure, and the burden falls on our ratepayers. I think this is terrible. There's an example here of what happens in Victoria. You can see there that a nearly $2.5 million development creates a levy of just over $3,000, which in the scheme of things isn't a huge amount to a developer. This doesn't also take into account how much profit that developer is going to create from the development. So I think it's only fair that we start charging developer fees. That's obviously not up to me to write those rules. So what this motion is seeking to do is that we seek sector support through submitting a motion to the next LGAT general meeting, and that we note the issues raised. So I'm hoping that I can get support from fellow councillors. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. This has been a hobby horse of mine since I was first elected, and I don't know if Dr. Stevenson remembers David Lovell. He was very much an advocate of this, and we did a study at the time to find out how much it actually cost our community for every lot to develop it, the infrastructure that we had to provide. And at the time, and it was in the early 90s, it would have cost $17,000 per lot, from memory. And we decided at that stage that we would charge $500 because that was all the local government the local government minister allowed us to charge $500 instead of $17,000. And that's a long time ago. And I think it's time that this matter was looked at again. I don't know when the developer charge was removed from council. It must have been formally removed, but I can't recall when that occurred. It's possible that the state government overrode us and said, no, you can't do this anymore. But the amount of development we have, and we're one of the fastest growing municipalities as we know, is passing that cost on to the existing ratepayers, to the existing properties. Our rates will increase because we need to provide that infrastructure. Mind you, that amount was ascertained when we also provided sewage and water, which we no longer do. And I understand that TasWater are also looking at developer costs and charges, and I guess that will help us understand the amount that we should be looking at. It states that on page 58 of this report. I think it's a very important issue that we should be facing. Some people argue that it's only going to be passed on to the new owner of the property as increasing their costs. But it is only fair that the person who makes a profit out of development contributes to the general community infrastructure as well. So I think it is something we should be considering seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further speakers on the notice motion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm broadly supportive of infrastructure contributions, and I think myself and Councillor Westwood have spoken a lot about the fact that people need to contribute. I'm interested in the estimated cost, the example that's given here, the figures that are used to calculate the levy. From Victoria, it says, this is the top of page 58, in Victoria there are three types of mechanisms for council to obtain contributions, the development levy, the community infrastructure levy and the metropolitan levy. The figures there, they seem to me very, very small. So we're talking about 0.1% of the overall cost, the total cost of the development. Does anybody happen to know whether, as a general sense, whether that is the kind of the default position to have something that's 0.1%? I mean, to my mind, I would want it to be above 1%, that's for sure.
Dr. Stevenson.
It's certainly... there has been no specific suggestion, but in the past it was higher than that when we did have the ability to raise developer contributions. I think this specific example that Councillor Glaidwright has provided is only the Metropolitan Planning Levy. I think if you applied some of those other levies, they would be higher. So I would suggest that it's only, as an example, the motion does not refer to any particular stance, and that is the work that Legat has been undertaking. With your discretion, yes. Mayor, I might just address Councillor Fox raised sure. the question of when we lost this ability. When I first started in local government in 2007, we certainly did have councils leveraging various and not consistent infrastructure charges, and when we hit the last recession before the one we've just gone through, the government of the day did seek to halt those in order to stimulate the economy. And we still have the power, so there was it was a temp. We still have the power, but the problem has been the very effective lobbying by developers, which makes it very difficult for a council to go alone, which is why through the Local Government Association the advocacy has been about a statewide approach which we can embed and which can't be unravelled easily.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Just to finish my contribution, so as I said, I'm broadly supportive of this idea, but I would make the point that we should, when implementing these changes, or at least advocating for the implementation of these changes, we should go as hard as we possibly can and then find some compromise from that position. But I'd make the point that since the early 1990s, house prices, for example, on average have increased by 550%. Developers are doing better than they ever have done probably in human history in terms of the low interest rates that we're seeing are, historically they have no precedent. And so it is the ratepayers of Kingborough who are picking up the tab when it comes to all of these large developments. And we do know that there is much more work to be done, that developers certainly can and should contribute much more than they do, because we're trying to build an amazing municipality for all of us and make sure that nobody gets left behind. And at the moment, what we've seen as a result of, you know, particularly in the housing market but also elsewhere, there's a great siphoning of wealth up to the very top 1%, and so I believe that it's time for that 1% to give back where they can. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I support taking this to Legat and advocating the reintroduction, if you like, from our perspective, of developer charges. We had them. They were working. It's not fair on the existing residents that they have to pay for the newbies coming in. And I think it's long overdue. It's interesting, of course, that Tas Water voluntarily gave up this, and now they're looking to reintroduce it because they can see the benefits. And if they want to provide water to all and sundry, then they have to have some mechanism to raise money. We're in the same situation. People put roads in and then we've got to maintain those roads. We've got to have other roads that are going to have more traffic, so we've got to maintain those roads as well. Like everything, people then develop at rat runs, and that's more roads that we've got to look after. We've then got to introduce rubbish and recycling collections to be extended. There's a wealth of things that we have to do, and I'm not suggesting that we don't do them, but I think it's time that those people choosing to come into the area need to pay their way, and not the existing residents that have been paying. Well, if they were 80 or 90 years old and they've lived in a home for 70 years they've been supporting financially all the development that's gone on, and I think it's time that we review this, and I would think that most councils, if not all of them, would be right behind this, and it's something I think a united voice, as Dr. Stevenson said, a united voice can hammer away at it much better than one council. So I do support the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with what's been said, and I have supported or put forth a similar notice of motion previously. And I guess the point that I would like to make, that hasn't been made already, is that the community seems to assume that by approving large-scale developments, council gets bucket loads of money in rates, and that's absolutely not the case. It takes years and years before we come into any kind of positive return on those subdivisions, and they are associated with significant costs that are borne by the whole of the community, not just the community that benefits from the housing in that area.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers? Just briefly, I support this as well. I just wanted to get some clarification, though, because there's some in the response from Dr. Stevenson. She certainly acknowledges we can put this to Legat's December general meeting, but she said it's understood there will be a report provided to that meeting on the progress of Legat's investigations and advocacy around infrastructure charging. So I take it this work is already actually underway. We're just adding a further voice to it. Could you just correct that?
Yes, yep. Mayor. So Legat has been undertaking work in this space for some while, but what they don't have on the books is a whole-of-sector motion to support it. They have one in relation to Tas Water infrastructure charges, but not... and so this would add weight to their advocacy as well.
Thank you. I've got nothing further, just to say I look forward to taking this to Legat to the December meeting. Councillor Gladwright, would you like to sum up?
Just have one last question for you, actually, Mayor. I'm wondering what value you think there is in writing to other mayors and seeing if their councils would like to follow this type of thing ahead of that December meeting.
Happy to do that. Yep, absolutely. Is that your summing up? The question was the summing up.
Oh, just that it's time that we get in line with the rest of Australia.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you very much. I'll put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Gladwright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 59, a notice of motion headed RV Friendly Municipality, submitted by Councillor Bastone. I assume I have a mover and Councillor Bastone. Do I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Midgley.
I did start off asking that the council declare Kingborough an RV friendly area, providing dedicated parking and signposts, and the officer's report states that we cannot do it. It needs to be done by the Camper Van and Motorhome Club of Australia. The desire to have us declared an RV friendly area has been put to me by numerous people in the community who for the last 18 months have been travelling round and round Tasmania rather than going off to the mainland for their usual winter holiday. And they've noticed that in most towns in Tasmania, they are RV friendly, and it's quite a, I think, quite a sad state that here in Kingborough we are not. We've already had an RV strategy in 2016 that we looked at. It was brought back before us in 2017, and since then nothing has been done. Now, to meet the essential criteria of being made an RV-friendly town, we need to have appropriate parking within the town centre, and I have listed the areas of the several towns within Kingborough where that could happen. The provision of short-term low-cost overnight parking, and I know this was definitely one of our sticking points when we tried to get Margate declared an RV-friendly town, because we couldn't agree whether the camper van should be at Drew Point or whether they should be up near the men's shed. And this is one of the big problems for Kingborough. The access to potable water and then the access to a free dump point in an appropriate location. We have only two dump points that are free, and the one here in Kingston does not meet the criteria that the camper van and motorhome community want, because it is not located in a position accessible to all types and sizes of recreation vehicles, and it is installed in a manner that ensures all vehicles can access the facility. Our dump point, large vehicles cannot access the point here in Kingston. So for people travelling round, we've got a dump point at Adventure Bay, one at Gordon, one at Snug that you can only use if you're part of the caravan park, and one in Kingston that we can't actually have everyone use. Now, the Motorhome Association subsidises dump points for councils. They will provide the dump point, and the council is responsible for the installation and the maintenance of them. And I think we need to revisit this and look at areas like at Kettering, where we could have overnight parking near the hall. We could have a dump point there. We have a sewerage system in Kettering which is underused, and as such, because it's underused, has problems. We have a sewerage area at Woodbridge. Again, it only services the school and a few houses. These are all areas that would provide parking and provide dump points. So what I would really like to do is ask that we revisit our strategy again and have a look and see what can be done. The motorhomes are a growing industry. If you want to buy a motorhome at the moment, your wait is approximately a year. It's a really big business, and I would like to see Kingborough getting some of the tourism dollars from the motorhomes and not having them all head off down the Huon instead of here. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. I have a couple of questions, but I am happy to talk about motorhomes. They definitely provide my family with accommodation when they come to visit me, and they like their own private space. And I think with the growing number of downsizing, we're probably going to see a lot more RVs interstate families, you know, friends and things visiting families due to the trend in kind of smaller housing. So I'm just confused a bit through you, Mayor, just in regards to the actual motion. What is the motion? And then what Councillor Bastone said that she would like to revisit the strategy. So the motion is that Council declare Kingborough an RV-friendly area. Is that correct?
Councillor Bastone.
Yes, it is, but if you read further down to the officer's report, we cannot do that.
Yes.
We have to wait for them, the motor and caravan people,
yes,
to nominate us. So my suggestion is that we therefore look at a way of being able to do this.
Thank you. So, yeah, just explore that a bit more and your last statement in regards to what the officer's recommendation is, that we review the strategy. I think that's the way forward. We review the RV strategy. So really the motion that you put forward, it cannot meet, but you still would like to review the RV strategy. So I'm just wondering, and some guidance in regards to then how we can amend that for Councillor Bastone, because I would support reviewing the RV strategy.
Do you have a set of words, and then you might like to suggest to Councillor Bastone, because the way it's written at the moment, it's not consistent with what we now understand is her intent.
Yes.
So if you can come up with some words, or someone else can, ask Councillor Bastone and yourself as the seconder whether those words are acceptable, and then we can deal with it all in one go.
Someone else, I'm the seconder, so if Councillor
Wass.
Thank
you, Mayor.
Oh, hang on, sorry, beg your pardon. Just Mr. Smee would like to say something.
Through you, Mayor, I'd suggest that the motion read that Council pursue RV-friendly status within Kingborough. Because the process is to make application to the CMCA. They come and do an audit, they check it against the criteria. So if that's the intent, we can't declare it, but we can pursue it. And in relation to the strategy, as I've indicated in the officer's comments, has yet to be endorsed by Council, and given it's now 5 years old, should be updated. So Council pursue RV friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Bastone, is that... are you happy with that amendment?
It's lovely.
Councillor Midgley, as the seconder, are you happy with that amendment? Thank you. So the motion has now just become that Council pursue RV-friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter. Have you finished speaking, Councillor Midgley?
Pursuing, can I ask a question about that word pursuing? So pursue doesn't mean that it declares us. We're just pursuing and finding out the information and gathering information to then help make a decision. Is that correct?
It's my understanding that it's lodging it with the Camping and Motorhome Association, because we can't, that's the process. We can't declare it. We have to apply to them to declare it. So it's indicating an intention to lodge an application to have it declared.
I'd probably rather explore then. Well, I'd rather update the strategy. So I probably then wouldn't support that first sentence. I would rather say that we update something I would rather support an amendment to it around the strategy updating versus the first part of the amendment.
I'd be happy to move that amendment.
Excuse me, just one moment. But it's agreed.
Yeah.
Councillor Fox, are you of a mind to move that as an amended motion? Or does anyone want to move that as an amended motion?
I thought we had decided to revisit the strategy. I wanted to pursue the RV-friendly status in Kingra and update the strategy in relation to that matter. That was the amendment that wasn't supported.
We're just looking at the meeting procedures and just realised that the mover and seconder can't amend it as such.
That's right, and I can.
That's right, so that's why, so, yeah.
But I don't know whether the dedicated parking, et cetera, that's the original motion,
isn't it? That was the original
motion. Yes, that's what I would move.
Okay, so we have an amendment by Councillor Fox. Do I have a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Westwood? Okay, so we're now talking on the amendment, and it's 8 o'clock. Just saying. Okay, on the amendment, Councillor Fox.
I just feel that this is the best way forward because.
Yeah, no. I'm surprised it's 8 o'clock.
Okay.
I'm not trying to stifle debate, I was just commenting on the time.
No, I'm just looking around the room and seeing people shaking their heads, and I can't understand why they don't want to support this, because what we're trying to do is to achieve exactly what Councillor Bastone wanted to do but can't do, because the RV people are the only ones that can declare that we are an RV friendly place. But by pursuing what we want to do and then updating our strategy will bring us to the same place and give us a good outcome. I think all of us around the table are keen to see RVs in our area and to see better facilities and infrastructure to support them, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thank you. Councillor Fox. Now I'm on the amendment. I've got Councillor Wass and then Councillor Glade, right? Councillor Wass.
No, I'm going to pass up on this, Mayor. An alternative amendment which I think I'll talk about after this is put.
On the amendment, Councillor Gladewright and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I think it's really important that we understand what this is going to cost us, that we don't pursue something when we don't understand what the costs are, because one of the examples said that establishing a self-contained RV camping site at the cost of $70,000 would require blah, 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 blah. I feel like there's a lot of expense in achieving that, and I feel like it's important that we understand what those costs are before we commit to it. So in a way, maybe the wording needs to actually include getting those costings first.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I had a wonderful time going back through 2017 to see what happened and why this was resoundingly turfed out, which it was. I'll make the point that the vote to not pursue the RV strategy was 1-7 votes to 3. And the reason for that is because the finance component of it says the draft Kingborough RV strategy did advocate an approach that estimated a cost of about $80,000. Side note, what's $80,000 in today's language? If this strategy is not adopted by Council, then it will consider other proposals. Now, the most important thing from the discussion, and the reason why it was resoundingly thrown out, came down to this idea of competitive neutrality. It turns out that all Australian jurisdictions are committed, they have committed to requiring that competitive neutrality principles are applied, and all have enacted legislation to ensure that that is achieved. In layman's terms, competitive neutrality says a council can't compete against a private business and undercut them deliberately. And because in Kingborough there are several sites that are already private that are running RVs, if council starts running businesses as RVs, why aren't we running ice cream trucks? Why aren't we running our own fast food outlets? Well, the reason is there's competitive neutrality laws that say we're not allowed to. So it says we actually have to charge at cost in order to not put private businesses at a competitive disadvantage. Also, there was a workshop in 2016, and at that workshop it says in the public council minutes, when this strategy was rejected, private businesses and organisations are better placed to identify opportunities that suit their particular circumstances. Council support for other landowners and businesses to become RV-friendly destinations could be provided as opportunities arose and in accordance with individual merits. Secondly, they said this was the results of the workshop, which is why they rejected the strategy. The need to comply with competitive neutrality arrangements discourages council's active involvement. The use of council's public recreation reserve at Drew Point for RV parking would be inappropriate because it would result in a loss of recreational land and reduce the opportunities for alternative future uses. And the various costs involved in implementing the RV strategy's recommendations, specifically in regard to Drew Point, could not be justified. Council would have other higher priorities for these funds. There may well be additional facilities required of council in order to meet future RV expectations. The designation of Margate as an RV-friendly town could not be progressed as it didn't meet the essential criteria for having parking, and council's involvement in promoting the area to RV visitors is already part of the Southern Trove marketing program. That website is still up. I checked it yesterday. And doubt was expressed about the need or merit in staff having additional involvement. Council decisions are all about priorities. I would like a street tree strategy, and that might cost $80,000. Dusting off an old strategy that's clearly within the remit of private business and clearly is in contravention of competitive neutrality arrangements, that is this $80,000 that is coming at the direct expense of potentially my street tree strategy or any of the other number of exciting possibilities like an aquatic centre for Kingborough or whatever else we might want. So the reason that this was turfed out in 2017 and there were only three people who were in favour of it was because I think people didn't adequately grapple with the idea that there are already private enterprises engaged in this and council should not be competing against them. We should facilitate private enterprise because RVs are great and they help the economy, but we shouldn't be running camper van businesses because there's already people in the private market that do that and they do it very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've got a feeling Councillor Street was going to say all of what you just said because he's talked on that topic before. I now have Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Bastone on the amended motion.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I've lost the power of speech.
Thank you. I was not intending to vote for the original motion, but I'm happy with the amendment. I probably should have declared an interest in that I am an avid caravanner. And I did look at the application of competitive neutrality principles to public camping in Tasmania, which I just happen to have a copy of here, referred to by Councillor Cordova. The point I think that you've missed, though, is that this is not about going to the business of running a caravan park, a caravan park run by a public sector that would compete with the private sector, because the principles refer to the provision of public facilities that can be used for overnight camping. We don't allow people to camp overnight in camper vans in our municipality. If we were to implement a strategy like this, we may need to up compliance to make sure that doesn't happen. But I don't think, my reading of the principles is that I don't think that application of competitive neutrality applies in this instance. I do acknowledge that we aren't very RV friendly, and I do also acknowledge that it probably would be quite expensive to become RV friendly in terms I'm thinking mainly of car parking, but I think car parking is a bigger issue for our municipality. We've recently discussed food vans. We're not really, we've got growing pains, and I think car parking is one of them. But I do agree that using the dump point down near the Darcy's, what's it called?
Wetlands.
Down near the wetlands.
Wetlands.
Yeah, is very difficult to get a, we're not just talking motorhomes, we're talking caravans as well, and it is a growing industry. We don't have a lot of caravan parks within Kingborough itself. A lot of them are down further in the Huon. But people certainly do pass through, and we're trying to attract visitors to our town, and a lot of people do come in RV vehicles, and I think it would be good to revisit the strategy. So I support the amended motion.
Thank you. I have Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Street on the amendment.
I think one of the things that I have to take up with Councillor Cordova is the fact we do not have a large number of RV sites. I'm not talking about caravans that need to plug into electricity, that need to use facilities. I'm talking about somewhere where you can stop when you're fully self-contained. Now, we have very few of those in Kingborough. We've got one at Gordon. They tried to get one at Margate behind the Bowls Club and they were shut down for no apparent reason other than they didn't have a licence to operate there. So they were trying to do something. I don't know where this $80,000 comes from that it will cost us to set up. We can have our dump point provided for free. This will be given to us. We then have to install it, of course, but I'm sure it's not going to cost us $80,000 to have a dump point installed. And I think it's just a service to the public. It's very good for our economy. When you read through the strategy, it gives you a breakdown of how much money actually RVs bring in. And we don't want them travelling through in and out in a day. We want them to stay within Kingborough. Go over to Bruny Island, spend some time over there.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, you're right. I have spoken about competitive neutrality before, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it was. It wasn't in relation to this. I think it was might have been in relation to green waste removal, potentially. Food vans, maybe. Well, it's actually not a bad point. Look, I'm happy to support the amendment and then support the amended motion in spite of misgivings around the competitive neutrality principles. And I think Councillor Cordova is partly right in that it's certainly applicable. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And it is something where we're going to have to be careful. If it's something that we pursue, there's no doubt that we're going to have to be careful with the competitive neutrality principles in how we were to take it forward. I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge between now and actually achieving RV-friendly status, if that's even turns out to be feasible. And certainly one of the considerations that will have to be made is whether we are complying with those competitive neutrality principles. Certainly the provision of public parking for RVs is not necessarily in and of itself offensive to the competitive neutrality principles, and neither is necessarily advertising that you're an RV-friendly town. It then becomes about the market in which you're operating and cost attribution and all of those sorts of things as well. And so it is a relevant consideration, but I don't think that it should stop us from having a look at this, which I think is the intent of the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. A further question around the process. The word, like, from pursue to the process and implementation, and wondering staff's thoughts in regards to what that looks like, perhaps, if they might know, and also in regards to the thought to guidance on costs and perhaps staffing time, that if this motion is put tonight.
Mr. Smee might be able to help us with that.
Through you, Mayor, I would envisage the process as being, one, an update of the strategy with a brief to whoever's preparing that strategy to include consideration of the competitive neutrality issues, to include consideration of all of the criteria set down by the CMCA to achieve the status we're trying to get to, and to include an assessment of costs required to implement the strategy. So they would be the three things. That strategy would then need to come to council for endorsement. Council would then be informed as to what are the costs we're talking about and what are the implications of the competitive neutrality principle. So I'm not sure what the previous strategy cost us to undertake, and there will obviously be a cost associated with updating it. So I think Councillor Street is correct. There is a fair bit of water to go under the bridge, and you know there's a body of work that needs to be done before we can start putting up signs saying, hey, we're RV friendly.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Councillor Midgley? Councillor Westwood with a question.
With a question. The intent of the motion, is it to actually get Council to set up specific areas for overnight camping, or is it to provide parking and dump points for people who are travelling through our municipality?
Councillor Bastone, can you...
My original one was not to have overnight parking, to look at that again, but the officer's report states quite clearly that overnight parking is part of the criteria to become an RV-friendly place.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further... Councillor Fox, are you on the amendment?
I'd like to close it when you're ready.
Oh, OK, sorry. Councillor Cordova, on the amendment?
Two questions. Firstly is, if this amendment, irrespective of what happens with this amendment, do we ever go back to the original motion to debate that? Like, will I have a second
opportunity? Depends what happens with the amendment.
So if the amendment passes, that's the end of this debate on this topic of RVs. No, it's not. We go back to the original amendment.
We then discuss it, just the amended motion.
Sorry, another opportunity to speak?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, you do. Councillor Gladride, have you got a question?
Yes, just really quickly, how much is the updating the strategy supposed to cost? You said that there will be fees involved in just that component, and we don't even know what that is.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. Without going back to the market, I presume we could go back to the original consultant that prepared it and ask for a cost to update, and whether that's within our current operational budget, we'd need to see. It may well need to be a budget bid for next financial year.
I think that's more appropriate. It needs to be a bid in the budget process rather than us committing to this now.
Just briefly, because I haven't spoken on anything on this, I support the amendment because it's obviously more in line with the intention of the of what Councillor Bastone was wanting to put forward rather than the original motion, but I have significant concerns about the cost implications for this. So I'm happy to support the amendment, but I am then nervous about supporting it overall because I feel like we're doing this out of a budget process and without the correct financial information for us. So, Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up the debate on the amendment?
Yes, I would. I feel that it's been a good discussion. The concern raised by a few people is the cost of this report, but we mustn't forget the amount of money that RVs contribute to our community. They spend money in our shops, they go to our cafes and restaurants, and they contribute significantly to fuel service stations, etc. I was under the understanding that overnight parking, camping, is allowed for one night only, and that is tolerated by council. That is whether it's in a tent or in an RV. And I also understand an RV, if they're self-contained, they don't actually need to be by the toilet. We can't stop them parking in the middle of the street. They're like a car that's parked overnight in the middle of the street or outside somebody's property if they're visiting a family. We can't stop them. So, but it's providing that extra amount of infrastructure that helps them be able to use toilets, be able to have a dump station particularly, and Council did put in the first dump stations in the early 90s. Councillor Bowman was a driver of that, and so was I. And I think it's important that we make it easier for people to come and visit us and not make it harder, because they'll just go elsewhere. As Councillor Westwood said, they'll go to the Huon, where there are plenty of places for them to go. But there are people who want to look at our beautiful beaches, beautiful areas, and visit family, and they bring along their RVs. And I think it's important that we have a strategy and that we look at the cost of what it would be and then look at some specific issues we can address in that strategy. I do recall the motion that went to council previously, and it was very much a matter of the push from the RV people wanting Drew Point as a dedicated RV place, and that's what broke that debate, because nobody wanted to have RVs in on Drew Point in the middle of that playing field, which was earmarked for a car park for overflow from the jetty and from the actual Drew Point playground. It was an unacceptable location, and that's really what broke that particular strategy. I think this is a way forward, and I think Councillor Bastone's raised some important concerns that have been brought to her attention, and many people I know with RVs have had similar concerns. So I think the least we can do is to look at the status and look at our strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'll put the amended motion. It's moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood. It is that the Council pursue RV-friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Show of hands is required. All those in favour of the amended motion is Councillor Wass, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. Those against, Councillors Cordova, Midgley and Gladewright. So the substantive motion now becomes the amended one. So we're debating that the Council pursue RV-friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter. Councillor Wass and then Councillor Cordova. He beat you.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't like the amendment, although I support it, because it says that we're going to pursue. And if we're going to pursue, then we're not going to ease up until we get it. CMCA support financially very little, if you have a look at it. The local government authority pays the big majority, 95-96% of it. In Tasmania, as is consistent with other states, the CMCA has very small membership numbers. In fact, I don't think in Tasmania they even have 10% of the owners. It's either the Tassie Caravan Club or the Caravan Club of Tassie that has the 80-90% of the Tasmanian owners, the owners that are members with them. I think we have to start from the beginning again. And so what my amendment was going to be is that Council investigate the provision of dedicated RV and caravan parking sites within Kingborough, because I think that gives us an opportunity not only to look at RVs or CMCA, but it gives us the opportunity to look at the larger group. It also gives us the opportunity to look at some of the other people that were involved. The Kingborough Bowls Club were very keen on it. There's nothing to say the two golf clubs are not very keen on it, and there's nothing to say that even a resident with their property in the appropriate place wouldn't be keen on it. And if that's the case, should we be looking at that rather than going through the financial cost to provide it? I do believe that we do need caravans and RVs parking here. If you go to New South Wales, particularly if you go by caravan or RV, when you're coming in towards a town, 20 clicks out of the town, you will find there's free camping and firewood provided by the local government. When you go into town, you pay an RV or a caravan site fee. That's how much the shires in New South Wales appreciate what caravans and RVs can do for their economy, and I think we should be looking at it too. But I'm concerned that if we pursue that, well, to me, if we're going to pursue it, then let's go for it, because that's what the motion says, and I think that we should be taking a more approach. So Mayor, if you would consider my amendment, and we'll go from there.
Could you please repeat the amendment?
The Council investigate the provision of dedicated RV and caravan parking sites within Kingborough.
Okay, does that amendment have a seconder? Okay, so we're speaking now on the amendment.
I've probably said it all, Mayor, but very quickly, I think we need to, A, start from scratch. I think we need to investigate what we want to do, how we want to do it. We want to find out the cost. We want to find out the timeframes. We want to look at CMCA and what they're going to provide to us, but we also want to look at others. Now, if we've got a satisfactory site or sites within our municipality, CMCA will come to us or they will tell us to make application. And yes, it would be nice to be CMCA friendly or RV friendly, but if we've got people staying here, it's marvellous, because if you go to a town that people like, that person staying in their caravan or RV, put it out over the airwaves and everything flies. If they stay in a place and they are not happy, you can guarantee that not very many people want to go there, because again, they put it on the airwaves and they do talk to each other on a consistent basis and they do take into account what has been said. But I think this, Mayor, gives us an opportunity to start from scratch and investigate as to which way we want to go. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Wass. Councillor Midgley on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. Wondering, information from staff, would what Councillor Wass has raised be included in the strategy update?
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, there's no reference to an update of the strategy within that particular motion.
Okay, sorry, so I'm just thinking the other motion that we passed, could what Councillor Wass has stated be a consideration in the other motion that we passed? Even though we're speaking on this motion, I just need to understand about passing this one versus the other one. And
yeah,
but what it all comes down to, it to me, is actually the cost of updating the strategy.
So I think the key difference between the two motions, and Councillor Wass can correct me if I'm wrong, is one is committing to do the preliminary work. The other takes it a bit further and says do the preliminary work through the review and keep going. So that the motion, the previous amended motion, basically says keep going until you have RV friendly status. This one says let's investigate and bring it back and have a conversation about whether we want to keep going. Is that a fair summary, Councillor Wass?
That's fair, and of course staff might be a recommendation that this strategy be put in place.
Councillor Midgley? Okay. I've got a question now, because I don't read, I'm reading the amended motion from Councillor Wass and I don't understand the words I'm reading don't match the description that Dr. Stevenson just gave, and I don't know whether it's because I haven't eaten very much today.
to be fair, Mayor, it is narrower because it specifically mentions parking sites. It doesn't talk about all the other components of RV friendly status, which included overnight dump sites, etc.
So am I right in saying, though, that it doesn't, you started this, Councillor Bastow. Am I right in saying that this doesn't seek to get the strategy updated? I'm not right.
No, you're right.
I am right. Okay, so this is just about parking sites for RVs and caravans and not updating the strategy.
That's right.
I'm hoping that the mover will acknowledge that I'm right in that interpretation.
As I said before, Mayor, that would come forward from staff.
But with that motion, would it?
It goes against.
Well, if staff wanted that, it would be in the report that would come back, yes.
Well, it's a matter of what council wants, the councillors want, not what the staff want to put in it. So we do need to provide some direction. So if it is your intention to get work done on updating the strategy, then that would have to be included in the amendment. However, we're already so far down this rabbit hole. Oh, Councillor Street, you look like you might have something significant to contribute, look, or you might be as confused as a number of us.
No. Well, look, the only thing that I was going to say is fully respect Councillor Wass's right to move an amendment. The only issue that I've got is that I think we've deviated a fair way. Previously, amendments that have deviated this far from the original motion have been ruled out of order. I'm just wondering. I mean, look. We may as well just have a vote on it.
Right.
But yeah, it has deviated a long way from where Councillor Bastow.
Well, why don't we have a vote on it? Unless anybody has anything pressing to say, Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, something pressing. Thank you. Is that I totally agree with Councillor Street that this is not the motion that we looked at originally, obviously, because it's amended. But my point is that originally in 2017 there was a workshop that had costings, and I think that's far more appropriate because at this point nobody knows the cost of dusting off the strategy, nobody knows the cost of installing and maintaining any of these facilities or indeed scoping out where the parking should be, nobody knows the cost of the Gough's plastic easy dump facility that's part of the CMCA subsidy program. Basically, they install it for free and then they leave you with a cost in perpetuity. And we have no visibility over any of those costs. So to say that we should pursue this is very presumptive because it may not be a good deal. Councillor Fox raised the point that RVs bring in money to the economy, and that is true. In fact, the AEC group in 2014 for the Shire of Karratha suggested that $100 spent by an RV visitor at a local retailer provided a flow-on impact of $89 in the economy, five times higher than iron ore and mining. That's in the old strategy that wasn't approved. And I agree with all that. But the difference is that private providers are already offering this service. There are plenty of things that have a multiplier effect that are not currently offered by private profit seekers, and that's where the council's money and efforts should be going, to developing strategies around street trees or around disc golf or around aquatic centres or whatever else it might be, because there's no one already in the private market putting in street trees. So that's where council should be focusing our energies, not on something that's already completely managed by the private market. Are we dusting off a strategy that was rejected once before? Because at its core, that strategy, let's be very clear, it is taking ratepayers' money and it is giving it for money to install or scope out infrastructure or parking spaces that are for visitors from outside of the municipality. So you're taking local people's money and you're giving it to invest in infrastructure that's already being provided by the private sector. And yes, it might bring in more tourists and more economic value, but it's directly competing against our local businesses, directly competing. So it said, you know, the question was, where did this $80,000 come from? I read it straight from the 2017 report, and that's why there was a council workshop on it, because there are hidden costs. It's not as simple as saying, oh, we're going to look for the provision of dedicated car parks. There is a hidden cost there that we need to know about as a council, and right now this proposal is to undercut private businesses in Kingborough in order to take ratepayers' money, the local residents' money, and give it to visitors. And I think that's unfair. I think that the money should be spent on a million other priorities for locals, things like a street tree strategy or any number of other strategies that we should be dusting off or creating for the benefit of local ratepayers. This is, as far as I'm concerned, an industry push, and it's already been serviced by the private sector. I don't think residents of the community have... They certainly haven't contacted me about it, but even if they did, I'd want to know what proportion of this community wants us to spend $80,000 as a matter of urgency outside of the budget in order to pursue a strategy for RVs. What proportion? I don't know, and I don't believe that it's significant enough to warrant tipping out all of our other priorities. So I'm going to vote against this. I'm going to vote against everything until I see some evidence that it's a good idea and until we have a workshop. Thank you.
Councillor Bastow, and I think drinks are on you later.
I'm really sorry I brought this up. I am really only doing what my community have asked me to do, which is to bring it up, because they're quite adamant that we need to have this. Now, I don't know where these private enterprise businesses are, Councillor Cordova, in Kingborough, that are actually able to do all this. We've got the Snug Caravan Park, which is full all the time, and it is quite a different thing to what we're talking about. We're talking about somewhere for totally self-contained caravans or RVs to be able to park, to be able to dump, to be able to shop, to have double-sized parking for the shops. They can't go on top of Woolworths. it's not high, it's not strong enough. I'm asking that we would have an area put beside Coles where it just had a sign saying RV parking. You are only talking 2 or 3 parking spots. We're not talking huge amounts of money here, and this is, but the way you keep saying that we've got, this is already being provided for in our municipality, is not true. And I challenge you on which places you're saying are providing these that we will be in competition with.
Do I have any further speakers on the amendment? Yep, and Councillor Fox.
The one thing missing from the amendment is infrastructure. We're looking at the only one infrastructure, and that is parking sites. And I think the original amendment, which became the motion, is going to give us a far more broad understanding of what we need for RVs in our community, and I think we're going right off topic by going to caravan parks and caravan sites. That is a different topic we should deal with another day. So I'm going to vote against this second amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to put the amendment. It was moved by Councillor Walsh. It was seconded by Councillor Westwood. The amendment is that Council investigate the provision of dedicated RV and caravan parking spaces, sites within Kingborough. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Show of hands, please. All those in favour is Councillors Walsh and Westwood. Those against is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone and Reet. The amendment is lost. Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, we're back on the
middle one.
Thank you. The motion is that Council pursue RV friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter. That was as an amendment. Now, okay, so this is the substantive motion now. And okay, Councillor Street, then Councillor Midgley.
I have a procedural motion that the motion be put.
I just have one quick comment.
Oh, hang on.
I've got a seconder, you can't.
Procedural motion, so no discussion. It's moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastone, that the motion now be...
Can't do it, Mayor. They've spoken.
It's not right to the motion.
I haven't spoken on the original motion.
That is correct. So you can't second it, Councillor Bastone, but Councillor Street can, and I will second it because I haven't spoken on the original motion either. So the procedural motion is now that the motion be put. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Show of hands, please. In favour of the procedural motion that the motion now be put is Councillors Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. Councillor Midgley, is that a... You're voting yes. And Councillor Midgley, those against, Councillor Cordova and Walsh. The procedural motion that the motion now be put is accepted. Therefore, I am putting the motion. Let's go back and clarify what that motion is. The motion is that Council pursue RV-friendly status within Kingborough and undertake an update of its strategy in relation to this matter. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Councillors Fox, Street and Bastone. Those against? Councillors Cordova, Walsh, Midgley, Gladewright, Westwood and Reet. The motion is lost. I feel like our apologies to everybody watching along at home. I have a slight sense that we're caught in a Yes Minister episode. So we will move right along. I will leave the chair because it's a notice of motion that I have now, so I'd ask the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, to take the chair so that I can move the motion in my name.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us a notice of motion from Councillor Reet. Do I have a mover for that notice of motion and a seconder? Councillor Midgley. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. Look, this is just procedural. Unfortunately, when
We last considered this on the meeting on the 20th of September. There was a procedural error and it was not moved in accordance with the local government meeting procedures regulations, and so I'm resubmitting it for consideration to allow the report to be prepared, which is kind of ironic because the report actually has been prepared, so we'll probably have it at the next council meeting. So I don't think I need to say anything further.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Do we have any other speakers? No. With that, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is unanimously passed, and I will hand back over the chair to the Mayor.
Thank you very much, Deputy Mayor. We move now to page 86, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received by Council. Moving to page 87, the North West Bay River Catchment and Action Plan 2021 to 2031 with a recommendation on page 90.
So moved.
Thanks. Moved. I was just before I was going to say thank you to Ms Quinn for being very patient in getting to this point of the meeting that she's been waiting patiently for. So we have an enthusiastic mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And whilst I realise it's been a long meeting so far, this is a fascinating report, a really important one for the cultural and natural values of the area, and I'm so proud and excited to move it, and I'm very pleased to have Ms Quinn here to be able to speak to it. Essentially what we're looking at here is the North West Bay River Catchment and Action Plan 2021 to 2031. It updates the original plan and with the latest information. And what I'm trying to find here is that basically the North West Bay River, of which I now realise that I live in the throughput zone, is it's Kingborough's largest river system. It's 9,600 hectares, and it is absolutely crucial to so many different species, threatened species, really important threatened vegetation communities, and this management plan essentially lays out the list of recommendations and actions. It also lays out basically an assessment of what we know about the catchment and how important it is. It really importantly, it lays out what the threats are, and there's an enormous section within this that talks about the threat caused by weeds, the various weeds that are in the municipality, and particularly after flood events and things like that, they tend to spread throughout the catchment, and so it behoves us to really pay attention to those and adequately resource actions to thwart that progression. I wonder how to do it. My first question really is I wanted to take the opportunity to ask about foxgloves and the fact that they're not a designated weed in this, but they're recognised here as being... I think somewhere it talks about them being a higher priority, so I just wanted to ask about foxgloves first of all.
Ms Quinn. Side first, then the top.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, I am getting a bit tired or hungry or something, sorry. thank you for your question. Yeah, foxgloves have been particularly topical in the last couple of months. They come into flower, they're purple, and they're really easy to see amongst the green backdrop of vegetation. The top of the catchment is particularly an issue for foxglove, but foxglove are not declared under the Weed Management Act. They're an environmental weed, and there's some reasons for that. So, yes, there are some great hot spots around Summerlees Road and in the upper catchment. They are a weed that has a less ability to really impact native vegetation because of their nature as a sort of soft fleshy weed that requires disturbance. So you find them on the margins of roads and on the margins of rivers that are disturbed and things, but they don't generally penetrate into bushland areas unless there is disturbance, so they will track down North West Bay River, but are unlikely to have a really significant impact and sort of change those vegetation communities in the long term. We do actively control them on our land, and we do support the community to control them, so we've recently updated an information sheet which we've distributed to communities, including the Friends of Longleat group, because they're very interested in controlling foxglove, so council can't do any compliance action on foxglove, but we will certainly pursue it where we can on our land or assist and support community groups to do it.
Thank you, and that raises a really good point that indeed my understanding is that the whole group of the Friends of Longley essentially associated and formed around this kind of catchment management plan, so there's been some amazing community dividends paid already to it. I wanted to raise the point that the catchment plan does talk about with increased population we are going to see increased visitation, and that's why it's also very exciting that we've got, you know, this Longley to Margate multi-use trail that's starting to come on board. But we do need to be cognizant of the fact that we need to provide improvements to facilities and services around those, particularly the swimming holes, because on hot days we're going to get more and more visitation to that. I do have a question about Palawa consultation and the importance of First Nations involvement in understanding the full gamut of the cultural importance and indeed environmental importance of this area. Can you please outline for us what the next steps are in terms of Palawa engagement?
Ms Quinn.
Thank you, Mayor. What we intend to do, so we did initiate consultation with the Aboriginal community when the consultant did, who developed the plan for us, and recognised that we didn't receive very high level of engagement at that time, and it's incredibly important to us that we do that. So that's why those actions are still there as a high priority. So what we intend to do is engage one-on-one outside of the formal consultation process and meet with those organisations and to see if there is a level of interest, because we really don't know a lot about both the heritage sites in terms of Aboriginal heritage in the catchment, but also just how they use the land and what it means to them now, to modern day First Nations people, and so we will continue to engage with those people.
Thank you, that's so important. I found it fascinating that in terms of the European heritage in this area, we're talking about a catchment that has been really highly utilised in various ways since about 1803 in terms of the Western culture that's been utilising this area. And am I right in my assessment that from my reading of the report, the upper catchment, much to my great pleasure to learn, is actually in surprisingly good health, and it's just the kind of lower areas of the catchment that are of higher concern?
Ms Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that is true, and that's because most of it is in Wellington Park Reserve. So, so it's under the management of the Wellington Park Trust and the Hobart City Council. So that's why it is. The catchment itself is quite stable. So the threats are going to come from things that are potentially beyond residential and sort of regional development. They'll come from things like climate change and broader risks and you know, flashier floods and storm events, which will cause erosion and sedimentation.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say that it appears that it's a very high energy system in the sense that, you know, it gets these big flooding events that cause erosion and things like that, and not a lot of storage along the river system. Probably the most fascinating area for me is in kind of pages 18 and 19, where it talks about the various flora and fauna and the threatened species that are there. But importantly, not just the threatened species, it's estimated that there's 146 animal species, including 93 species of birds, 28 of mammals, 15 of reptiles and 10 of fish. Some of the ones that we know about, you know, the southern brown bandicoots, long-nosed potoroos, pygmy possums, wombats, echidna, birds.
You don't need to read them all out.
And platypus, you'll be pleased to know, as well. So to conclude my contribution, Mayor, and I appreciate it, I'm sure that somebody will ask, or maybe I better ask now, can you please take us through, like, the main things that we really need to fund in terms of the action recommendations within the report?
Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I think for council, so council owns less than 1% of the land in this catchment along the river, so we own some quite narrow, you probably have discussed this land as part of the trail feasibility study, some quite narrow stretches along the river itself. So in terms of managing land, we don't have we don't require a whole lot of resources to do that, and we do that out of our existing operational budgets. I think the critical thing for any catchment plan is facilitating engagement into the plan. So it's helping to support people to understand their connection to the catchment, to the river, their place in it, and what they can do to support that into the longer term. And I think council's very well placed to do that. So people, there's quite a few key stakeholders here who are large land managers, like Crown to Pipui, and so I think, and some of the larger farms at the bottom of the catchment, I think council has a very critical role to help to support conversations between land and managers to come back every year and review the plan, to reprioritise actions if required, to monitor and evaluate and do adaptive planning, so we can support the community to do that. We will be able to do that to a very minimal level in our current operational budget. So one of the key priorities is to look at funding a position to support that, to support the community in the implementation of the plan.
Thank you. I really hope we can fund that. And am I right that there's two short films that are...
Yes, you are. Okay. Correct.
Okay, no more to be said. To conclude my contribution, Mayor, this is our largest river system, 25 kilometres long. It's an incredibly important catchment. A couple of thousand people live there, and the environmental ecosystem services that are providing to us are invaluable, and it's incumbent upon us to protect those.
Thank you.
I hope we'll do just that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I had Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley's decided... No.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank
Councillor
you.
Cordova has asked
Thank
and
you.
Commented.
Councillor Fox.
I just wanted to congratulate Council of having initiated this update of the Catchment Management Plan. It's wonderful to see a new generation of landholders who are interested to be involved. And the community is embracing it. I was, again, listening to a recording of people in the Longley Hotel, and they were talking about the fact that most of the water is captured by Tas Water at the headwaters of the North West Bay River. And I guess I'm really keen to see a coordinating role, but I guess these days, I mean, there was one when we had Graham Green do the original report when the committee was set up in the early 90s and I chaired it for 10 years. But that was before we had weed management skills on council. It was also before we had the natural areas team, and most of the council staff now wouldn't realise what a slim budget we had at the time and how much we did with such a small amount of money. And a lot of it was paid by NRM. So I think we had grants which gave us the plan, including the geomorphology study, which showed the way the river fluctuates because it's steep in some parts and quite shallow in others. And I guess I think it's wonderful that we're looking at this new updated strategy and that the community has come on board. My main concern is, though, that the work that was done to remove all the crack willows from the entire region, not just the river itself but all the tributaries, is slowly being undermined because we don't have a coordinator who's concentrating and focusing on that job. And that cost, I can't remember how much it cost, quite a lot of money, maybe 100,000. That is all being undone by the fact that we don't have a coordinator. And I don't want to dwell on that negative point, but I do think if we're going to include the community, that's probably the big message that we need to give to the landowners, the new landowners, is the fact that they need to get rid of their willows and their weeds because they are undermining the natural values of the area. But I can see that we need to move on. But I do think it's wonderful that it is being resurrected. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers on this? I just wanted to make a brief contribution because I've actually got a question. I'll make a contribution, but I've got a question first. So I was just a little confused because 5.1 on page 88, the finance section says, council is not a significant landowner. There's currently little opportunity to drive larger restoration projects as it has in the past. The plan does not extend council beyond its current commitment to manage and protect natural, cultural and social values on its land. These activities will be resourced within existing budgets or through grant funding or other opportunities, but then when you go to the actual plan on page 43 of the plan, the high priorities and listed as Kingborough Council responsibility are that we consider funding a project officer to oversee implementation of it and commit to a budget line item to resource ongoing implementation. So I feel that those two sections of the report were at odds with one another, and we've heard that information now, but I think it would be useful in the context of the discussion that we're having around the table that those two parts were captured in the finance section, because essentially, I know it's only saying consider, but it's still something that unless you've read right through then to page 43 of the plan, we wouldn't otherwise understand. So I think it's important that we understand as a council that if we are when we endorse this tonight, that we are going to have a serious look at this during the budget deliberations, because there's no point in us going ahead with this tonight if we're not going to make this a consideration. But look, that's just having said that, I want to thank Ms. Quinn for the work that she's done on this, because what struck me about it was the level of community engagement, the fact that there were 377 views on the when the stuff went up on our website, but also the fact that the Friends of Longley Area Group were formed out of this, and I know how strong their membership is already after only a short time having been established. And on the first occasion that I met with them a few months ago when I stepped into this role, the first thing they said, I said, what would you like as an association? And they said, we want the North West Bay River Catchment Plan passed. And so they will be very, very pleased to hear it. And certainly at the heart of it is about how we can support the community to, as the 70% landowners of this land, to actually carry out this project with our input and to ensure the ongoing health of the area. So I do thank you sincerely for the work that you've done on this, and I know the Friends of Longley Area Group will be very happy to see this passed, and we look forward to seeing this move forward in the next 10 years. Councillor Cordova, or did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion that as printed in the agenda. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to 17.2. I've got to turn the page. A recommendation on page 151. It's in relation to election caretaker period policy. We have a mover in Councillor Westwood. Do I have a seconder in Councillor Gladright? Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We discussed this election caretaker period policy in our meeting last week, and councillors determined to defer consideration pending further clarification in section 5.1.7, which refers to the use of council equipment and stationery. That report, or the policy, has now come back as an attachment to this report and includes the words use of council equipment and stationery, council supplied equipment and council branded materials shall not be used by councillors or staff in any manner that supports a candidate's election campaign. Councillors may continue to use council equipment and branded material throughout the course of the caretaker period to carry out their regular functions as described in section 28 of the Local Government Act. So essentially what this means is that if a councillor attends a function, they can hand out a business card to provide their contact details to someone who'd like to contact them to talk about an issue in more detail, but they can't walk around the municipality and use their business cards in place of a brochure. They would need to pay for that separately out of their own money. I guess a lot of it is common sense, really. You don't use ratepayer-provided equipment for your own personal gain. So thank you to staff for clarifying that for us. Generally speaking, we did have this discussion last week. Most tiers of government have some kind of caretaker period policy. It's very common at state and federal level. I believe it is common on the mainland at a local government level. We don't have such a policy in Tasmania at a local government level. It has been proposed and is coming up for consideration at some point in time, but in light of the fact that we have an election pending, proposed at the moment to be this time next year, I think it is good that we set an example in terms of good governance and leading the way and introduce our own policy that puts some stipulations and something in writing around the appropriate use of equipment, appropriate behaviours, and the type of things that council should be considering in that six-week period before a new group of councillors are elected. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. I've got Councillor Bastone.
I have a question. One of the discussions we had on this 5.1.7 was the use of council emails on our election brochures. And I don't see that that's been addressed in this.
It has at 5.1.9. It's been deleted.
Yeah, but when you read 5.1.7, you can use your branded material through the course of the caretaker period to carry out your regular functions. But not your. It doesn't say anything about the fact that you would use it on your election brochure or could use it on your election brochure. In fact, it specifically says that you can't use it. Well, it doesn't say emails, but it says that you can't use anything that supports a candidate's election campaign. So I still have a worry about that.
Mr. Snee, did you want to make a comment on that?
Through you, Mayor, yes, I took on board that this was an area of that may cause some confusion, so I simply deleted that clause in reference to use of councillor email addresses and telephone numbers as part of their campaign material, so it's now silent on that matter.
Is it? Because I'm looking at 5.1.7, which says use of council equipment and stationery. So haven't we just kind of put equipment up in 5.1.7?
It's now referring specifically to the use of the telephone number and the email address. It's not referring to the council equipment. What I deleted was the reference to use of council contacts, i.e. mm-hmm. the email address mm-hmm. and telephone yeah. number. What is still in here is the use of council equipment, but this policy now makes no reference to use of email addresses or telephone numbers because of that confusion that was raised last time where some councillors have their home number, which is also their contact for the community for councillor purposes. So that has now been deleted from the policy.
Gotcha.
The wording that I'm worried about is council branded materials shall not be used by councillors or staff. Now my email is a council branded email, so I feel that this is still not tight enough.
Through you, Mayor, it's referring to branded material as in it's got a logo on it. Your email address doesn't have a logo on it.
Do we need to put that definition in, perhaps? Oh. Okay. All right. Is there any further discussion? So it was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Gladright. I'll put the motion. I take it you didn't want to sum up. Apologies. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Okay.
Turning now to page 158, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Do I have a mover and a seconder for the recommendation that we move into closed session? Moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much to everyone who has been watching along at home. If you're still with us and you've been with us all the way, it's very admirable. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meeting's audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.